call to order a meeting for the Grover Beach City Council Tuesday, July 5th, 2016. And would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for the brave men and women who have given the ultimate sacrifice for our freedoms and liberties in this country. Thank you. Please remain standing. Councilmember Nichols, will you lead us in the pledge tonight?
I'd be glad to.
Can it begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Please be seated. Donna, when you're ready, roll call, please.
Here.
Here.
Here. Here. Thank you, Donna. With that, we are going to review the agenda as presented by staff and see if any council members want to change the order of the agenda. Do any members want to change the order of the agenda? If not, I'll accept a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. So we are going to proceed with the agenda as presented to the council. I believe there are extra copies on the table in the back of the room. So let's move forward with item number one. This is our ceremonial calendar tonight. This is a proclamation declaring July 2016 as National Parks and Recreation Month. And Ms. Petker, are you going to be giving this presentation? You have a slideshow you're going to get? All right. I'll read the proclamation.
Okay.
This is a proclamation of the City of Grover Beach designating July as National Park and Recreation Month, and it says, whereas parks and recreation programs are an integral part of communities throughout this country, including Grover Beach, and whereas our parks and recreation programs are vitally important to establishing and maintaining the quality of life in our communities, ensuring that the health of all citizens and contributing to the economic and environmental well-being of a community and region. And whereas parks and recreation programs build healthy, active communities that aid in the prevention of chronic disease, increase the community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of local tax base, increased tourism. This is a long proclamation. The attraction and retention of businesses and crime reduction. I'm going to let you finish this.
Got you all choked up.
I'm all choked up.
I'm just going to say, in a successful handoff.
Hydrate.
Whereas it is established through statewide public opinion research that 98% of California households visit a local park at least once a year. Two in three households visit a park once a month, and 50% of households participate in an organized recreation program. And most park use is with family and friends. Whereas the residents of Grover Beach, including children, youth, families, adults, seniors, businesses, community organizations, and visitors, benefit from the parks, the open space, sports fields, and courts, facilities, programs, classes, concerts, and special events provided by our Parks and Recreation Department. Whereas the City of Grover Beach urges all of its residents to recognize that parks and recreation programs enrich the lives of our residents and visitors and add value to our community's homes and neighborhoods. So therefore, be it resolved that the Grover Beach City Council hereby recognizes July as National Park and Recreation Month.
You have the floor.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council members. We're very happy to accept this proclamation this evening. This is our one time a year we get to shine and share with the City Council, members of the audience, and the community all the wonderful things happening in the City of Grover Beach with parks, recreation, programs. And I would like to share with you a brief PowerPoint presentation to highlight a picture show here on some of the things that we do. And this year's theme is superpowers. So that's the national logo for superpowers this year. This is our beach boardwalk, and this is one of the many beautiful assets we have in the City of Grover Beach, heavily used every day by tourists and locals all times of the day. That's a beautiful picture of some kids on the beach here in Grover Beach. This is our adult co-ed volleyball league. This is the only one in the South County. We hold this every year on the month of March through June. And it's open, always taking registrations. So go ahead and give us a call if you're interested. I'll give you our contact information and how to find us on social media at the end of the slideshow. This is our ever-popular mother-son dance. This has been selling out almost every year. I think we have some council members who can attest to that as well, with the kids and grandkids. We are so fortunate to have this event in our community. Again, this is the only one in the South County that moms and sons have the special evening with themselves, their dinner and dancing and great music. Here's our South County Skate Park. We're fortunate to have the partnership with the San Luis Obispo County YMCA for the operation of the skate park, our beautiful gazebo. Here's our Sizzling Summer Concert Series, another wonderful asset we have in our city of Grover Beach. We're hearing great feedback from the community and how wonderful this is and all of the positive comments. We do have to give the mayor some credit from years ago in his earlier term when he suggested, hold these every weekend so we don't have to keep remembering what dates to come back. So we do, every Sunday, June through September, except for the Stone Soup Music Festival. And that's also Saturday and Sunday of music, which is August 27th and 28th, by the way, this coming August. This is our plant exchange and our new garden expo in addition to the spring garden tour. These were the pictures we weren't able to show you the last council meeting, so there are a few extra here on this presentation. New this year, we're holding it at the Ramona Garden Park Center, and it was a great success for its first year. We had lots of water-wise vendors available and exhibitors, and the plant exchange went well. And we were able to feature beautiful gardens in Grover Beach. My clicker's not moving forward here.
Silence.
Here's the beautiful gardens. We're just going to go through these quite quickly. Again, they were featuring water-wise gardens and beautiful homes. We're so fortunate to have people who take the pride of ownership in the city. These are air plants and beautiful water-wise, drought-tolerant. This is the, we have beautiful facilities, the Grover Beach Community Center. That's our preschool program going on there. The Dune Run. We also have the Ramona Garden Park Center. We have wonderful classes, Lego Camp. This is coming up. We're still taking openings. We still have openings. We have the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission, and they work very hard in volunteering and finding beautiful gardens and honoring residents of the work they've done and recognizing them with the proclamation and offering them to be represented here. The Cal Poly Women's Basketball Team, they've come out for the last 14 years every Sunday in October and present this wonderful clinic for youth. And not only do they teach them skills about basketball, but they also talk about how they got to college and some life skills as well. So that's another excellent event. Again, we've every year honored the 9/11 event in our city, the firefighters and community, the annual holiday carved pumpkin contest and Balloony and the carnival, the partnership with Aurora Grande Link Club, the holiday parade, closing down Grand and partnership with the police department. And then we also offer water-wise workshops, and this was one that was led on behalf of the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission. And we wanted to finish our presentation with the great volunteers that won our Volunteer of the Year. These are some highlights of pictures from our last event with them and our students. And I think that's it. So I wanted to thank the City Council for your support. And to also emphasize that our department could not do everything we do without support of City Council, the Parks, Recreation, and Beautification Commission, all the volunteers and the partners and the donors and the sponsors. So we really appreciate everything that we're able to provide the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. Let me see if there's any questions. Any questions to my left?
No, no questions. Just thank you for the presentation. And I get many comments on my Facebook from people from outside the area at what wonderful opportunities we have, so many more than other places. So I appreciate it. We shouldn't take it for granted.
Barbara, anything?
Just keep up the good work. Jeff.
And actually, I'll echo those sentiments from both my fellow council members and ask you, if someone had a burning desire to sit on the Parks and Rec and Beautification Commission, is there vacancies, and how do we fill those vacancies?
We would love to have them participate on our commission, and they can contact our city clerk, Donna McMahon, and call City Hall 473-4567, get an application, or go online, grover.org. And we have openings. We're accepting applications all the time. We greatly appreciate it. Yes. And also, I forgot to remind everyone, you can get more information on grover.org and our city's Facebook page, and you can also follow us on Twitter.
So let me follow that up for someone who does not want to be on a 3 or 4 year commitment on a commission but wants to volunteer. That's a bigger question.
Yes.
How do they get involved?
Absolutely. Contact Grover Beach Parks and Recreation, 473-4580. And also you can go on our website for more information. We would love to even have one day, 1 hour of volunteer help. Good point. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Nice.
If it's okay, we can get our picture taken
for
the National Parks and Recreation website.
Well, you should take this since you read it, most of it.
Steps of that
dance. All right, let's move on to our presentations tonight. This is item number 2. This is a presentation by the South County Transit regarding planned service changes. Mr. Straw.
Thank you, Mayor Scholes and members of the council. I do want to recognize that Barbara Nichols serves on the South County Transit Board, and I appreciate her assistance in getting us to where we are today. So I'm going to talk a little bit today about, you should have some packets in front of you. I've got some copies back here as well. I want to mention that I've got copies of schedules. These are the current schedules that will be good for the next 2.5 weeks, and then we'll be replaced by new ones, but I wanted to give it to you for context. So what is South County Transit? South County Transit operates what's called fixed route service in the Five Cities area. We operate hourly service throughout the Five Cities area with 2 transit centers. The primary transit center is just a couple blocks up here at Ramona Garden. It's a great facility. We've got some great plans for updating it as well. But we do connect with the Route 10 service at the other transit center at the Prime Outlets. So the Route 10 comes through hourly to go north to San Luis Obispo or south to Santa Maria. So we make connections. They're time transfers, so you can transfer quickly from one bus to another. South County Transit, you may have noticed in the last few years here, we've updated the fleet. We've got newer vehicles. They're 2014 and 15 vehicles, use the cleanest burning diesel engines available. Our area has decided to use diesel vehicles primarily because of the hills that we deal with here. Natural gas is the other type of fuel that's typically used in fixed route service, but they really have trouble pulling the hills in our area. But I will say that the diesel vehicles today aren't your diesel belchers from 15 years ago. These things run clean. You won't even see a puff of smoke as they accelerate. So why am I here today? I'm going to talk about 2 primary things here. One is the need to increase fares, and the other one is to talk about a new service that we're implementing that really impacts, actually I think really does a good job of improving the service level in the Grover Beach area. So if you could go to the next slide, please. I'll talk first about fares. Why are we increasing fares? Well, there's a couple of reasons. We haven't increased our fares since 2010, and at that time we only increased the cash fares and not the pass fares. So the pass fares have remained the same price now for almost 9 years, and with inflation we need to look at increasing our fares to keep up with that. The bigger reason is because in 2010 the U.S. Census Bureau designated the Arroyo Grande Grover Beach area as urbanized. And because of that designation, it provides more federal funding to our area, which is a good thing. But on the flip side, the state requires that we now are required to achieve a higher level of fare revenues in relation to our total costs. We call that fare box recovery ratio. It's a lot more technical than Kathy's presentation before me. I'm sorry. And it's not nearly as friendly. It's much more technical. The fare box recovery ratio is a requirement. It went from 10% to 20%. So it effectively doubled, and we're not able to meet that 20% without some changes. So that's the other reason we're looking at fares. If you go to the next slide, I'll talk about the changes we're making in the service. If you look in your schedule and look at Route 23, it's a very circuitous route. We joke about it and call it the spaghetti bowl because it really does go in different directions all over the place. And the challenge with it, it could take you 5 minutes to get from your home to the store, but 55 minutes back home. So it's really out of direction travel, makes it very difficult. And it's very confusing. I've been in this industry for 30 years, and when I first looked at that route, I was very confused about where it went. The new route that you see up on this on the wall up here and in your packets, it's a bi-directional loop. That means it takes you 5 minutes to get there on Route 27. It'll take you 5 minutes to get there back to get back on Route 28. So it mirrors now the same level of service that's provided in the Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande area. So now we'll have bi-directional service in the Oceano and Grover Beach area. So the other thing we've heard a lot from our customers is how do we serve how do we get to Walmart and the shopping centers over in up along Branch Street. So this service will provide direct service for anybody on the Route 27 and 28 all the way up into Walmart on an hourly basis. So we're looking forward to that improvement as well. Initially we're going to implement this service on Saturday, July 30th. And the board adopted that, and they also allowed us to operate it fare-free for that first weekend. So that gives you a chance to get out there, give it a try, take your family out with you, go for a ride, meet our drivers. They're great folks. They're good professional drivers, and they'll help you understand it. The maps that I show up here is still a draft when we've actually made a small change on it. We'll have it up on our website in a couple days. We're still waiting for the final design on that, but it is representative of the general area that we're serving. I do want to mention also that our new programs, if you go to a bus stop, you'll see a small sign that's about 4 inches wide and about 18 inches tall. I should have brought a copy here to show everybody, but it has a four-digit number and a phone number. You can text that phone number with that four-digit number, and a second later it'll tell you when the next bus will be there. So we have this next bus service that's available either through a smartphone or even your old-fashioned text phone, or you can just call a phone number, 541-2228. The phone number's up on the sign, too. You can call that phone number, and the dispatcher can tell you when the bus is going to be there. We have GPS and global positioning satellite technology on the buses now that give you updated information to make it much more reliable and understandable for our riders. So I'm happy about these changes. Again, July 30th is the date that we're going to implement the service. Our website, if you go to www.slorta.org/South County Transit, actually it's SCT, it'll take you right to this information. If you go to slorta.org, it also puts this information right up front. We want to really get the word out. But give us a try. Go out and give us a ride. Ride the buses. The buses are clean, they're comfortable, they're air-conditioned, they're safe, and our drivers do a great job in keeping you safe as well. So be happy to answer any questions about the service and fare changes.
Any questions, Mr. Straw? None?
Yes, please.
Yeah, Karen?
So thank you very much for your report. The fare box recovery ratio requirement, did you say that is from the state?
It is. So we're primarily funded with two funding sources. One is the Federal Transit Administration. It's a federal program. And then we also get funding from the state through the Transportation Development Act, TDA. You folks deal with that when you do your budget making every year. The TDA funds, if you're in an urbanized area, which we are now, as of 2010, we're required to hit a 20% ratio rather than a 10% ratio if you're in a non-urbanized area.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mayor?
I had a question also about the fare changes. Just in looking at your chart, it seems like, I know that we do have to increase, but it seems like the percentage increases tend to be the highest on the discounted passes, especially the 20 ride discounted or the cash discounted, and it seems like the individuals that would qualify for those discounted might feel it the most. So I was wondering if you could explain that.
Yeah, it's really a matter of we try to use the nearest large coin. So we could make them exactly the same, but then you'd have a fare of, you know, $1.47, and it'd be hard to fumble with that kind of cash. I do want to mention also that we're implementing a brand new program here. You see on the bottom of this table is a $3 pass for all day service. So you can get on the bus once, pay $3, and ride all day long. That helps also with transferring between buses. We're going to eliminate the free transfers, which is similar to most transit agencies across the nation. They don't offer free transfers. But with a $3 general public pass or a discounted $1.50 pass, it's the same cost. You can ride all day and still not have to. So if you paid cash to get from, say, from here to Pismo City Hall, it would be 75 cents each way for a discounted person, which works out to be $3, or you pay $1.50 and get the whole ride and all day long. So that's a new program we're implementing, is a day pass for the South County area.
Thank you.
Okay. Kathy, could you put the map back up of the proposed changes for Route 23? And Jeff, thank you for coming in and making this presentation. I think this is really good information for the council and for anyone in the audience or at home that are watching. But I do have some questions regarding the changes to Route 23. I'm noticing that with the changes, and I understand the idea of getting rid of the spaghetti route, but I'm just looking at there's Route 23 would no longer run on 4th Street. Farrell Road looks like, as well as maybe a portion of Highway 1. Can you maybe just touch on those
bit? Can you go down two? I think it's two slides. There's this one right here. This shows the existing Route 23. It also shows the rankings of every bus stop.
Okay.
The higher the number, the lower the ridership. So the areas that we're removing service, for example, in front of the Soto Sports Complex, that's 35 out of 35. We get less than one passenger boarding per day on that route. It's important in the report that the board adopted, we showed the walking distance from an eliminated bus mm-hmm. stop to a new one, and in all cases it's a quarter mile or less, so roughly two blocks. But we really tried to put the ridership, or put the buses where the ridership was. With this GPS information, we have really robust information. I mean, really 40,000 pieces of data that we can look at over a six-month period to see where people are getting on and getting off. So the areas that were eliminating service or removing service, really there wasn't ridership there to really justify that route.
Yeah, and the same thing on Farrell, seems like.
Yes, on Farrell and 8th, there's a bus stop, and the ridership there was less than, it was three per day, so it really wasn't a lot. They would have to walk a couple blocks to get to the nearest bus stop.
Okay, I think it's just important for you to explain that, because it looks like you're changing the routes, and then you're bypassing Grover Beach, so obviously, you know, I'm always going to look out for our community first. The one thing I've expressed this to you, that the one thing I'm concerned about is I think providing a bus route to where the riders are is great for today in this day and time, but you know, what are we doing to help grow ridership? And so, is there enough flexibility to come back and modify a route if the need arises?
Absolutely, and I want people to understand that there's a program, because we use the TDA dollars, the Transportation Development Act dollars, there's a requirement that we go out every year and go through what's called an unmet needs process. And John, you sit on the SLOCOG board of directors, and every year in February you go through this process where we solicit information from the community asking where we're not doing a good job. And one of the areas I know it's a difficult one is getting from here to, say, San Luis Obispo or to Santa Maria, where there are some jobs that some folks have to travel. And a transfer is difficult. We know that. It does deter some, except for the most needy folks, to use that service, or very ardent transit supporters. It's a difficulty to make a transfer. So we do try to make sure that we have time transfers, but the question arises, could a commuter service start, say, in Oceano, go right up through Grover Beach and right up to a straighter shot? Uh-huh. And that's where we're really looking for information from folks. Go to our website. There's a place where you can put down your needs and your ideas of what could work better for you, and we certainly will listen to those.
Great, and I think the same thing can be said about Highway 1 and Grand. You know, the vision that we've got here is obviously the lodge, the conference center, the expansion of the train station, and so I think you'll look at that at the appropriate time, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir. Okay, let's move on to public communications tonight. I have two speaker request forms. The first is from, looks like this is a tag team. Is this Jim Wilson and Don Stout? And I believe this is public communications because you wanted to talk about the trees at 16th Street?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, start. Need to poke the timer.
She's got it.
Okay. In any case, my name is Jim Wilson, Don Stoutward. Thank you. We're board members on the Long Oak Estates Homeowners Association in Gower Beach, which is located between 16th and Oak Park. And on 16th Street, we had up till recently a series of cypress trees that were removed and were replaced with some smaller box trees. And the issue we're basically having is whether or not those trees are going to stay or if they're going to be replaced with sidewalk. And we've had some communication with our HOA manager and the city regarding how that's going to be handled. We have basically a timeline here, and I'll hand this over to whoever I need to at the end of this. But basically, we just want to make sure that this gets addressed, because right now what we've got is a series of trees that are being watered three times a week by a city worker instead of being irrigated through our irrigation at our complex, which we'd like to sort out one way or another. The other option we were given was to have sidewalks installed at our expense. So we kind of take an issue with this because we'd like to get it taken care of in one way or another. So there's quite a long timeline here, so I don't want to bore you with the whole thing, but I'd like to hand this over and see what communication we can get going to sort this problem out. Because the previous trees were basically a menace. They were every year they had to be trimmed. They were, at one point, a big branch fell on a tree, and the police had to come out and get it cut down. So we were glad to see them go, but now we'd like to see something happen with the trees that are in place. Or if it comes down to having sidewalks installed, we'd like to see that too, because obviously Gower Beach needs sidewalks. So that's basically what we're looking at. If we can have it addressed or someone contact our HOA manager, whose number is on this letter, that would be great, and we'd appreciate it.
Okay. And Mr. Wilson, let me just be clear. So you're talking about the streets on South 16th between Long Branch and Manhattan, or is it a that's primarily the
yes.
block?
Yes. Okay. That's exactly the location.
Okay, and then I think city manager, you can follow up with them on that. I think that's a question regarding those trees, and I've had other residents ask me about the trees at the 16th Street Park as well. So thank you for coming.
Sure, absolutely.
All right. Eric Daniels.
Mr. Mayor, Council, staff, Eric Daniels with PG&E. I want to just give you a brief statement today with respect to some activities that PG&E has had in the recent past that I'm sure you're all aware of. The company announced the proposal under which PG&E would operate Diablo Canyon Power Plant until the end of the current licenses through 2024 and 2025. Each reactor is separately licensed. But the company will not seek relicense for either one of the reactors for it to operate beyond that point. We are incredibly proud of the men and women who have made Diablo Canyon one of the finest nuclear stations in the country, and who, in so doing, have provided our state with greenhouse gas emissions-free energy for three decades. PG&E's energy is the cleanest energy that in the country. As such, the decision to forego relicensing has been a difficult one. Our executive branch has taken a great deal of time to consider the important matter and was highly engaged in the decision. Ultimately, the decision was driven by a dramatic changes that are taking place in California's energy landscape. We've done extensive analysis based on the range of scenarios and overwhelming conclusion that much of Diablo's base load energy output will not be needed past 2025. There are some key contributing factors to this. Although greenhouse gas emissions free, although it is greenhouse gas emissions free, California's policies have favored other forms of clean energy. State-mandated increase in renewable portfolio standards to 50% by 2030, the doubling of energy efficiency programs under Senate Bill 350, and the challenge of managing an overgeneration with a generation system like Diablo that isn't flexible to intermittent conditions, such as are increasingly influenced by solar and wind production, plus the growth of distributed generation resources, and then the potential increase of departure of PG&E's retail load customers due to community choice aggregation. We also have a number of state agencies that regulate the power plant, and recently we had to make an agreement with one of them in order to extend a license that would have expired in 2018 to the 2025 timeframe. A coalition was put together in order to support that and included labor, several environmental groups, and they've all agreed to express support for this regulatory action, which took place the week ago last. This compromise, we believe will create a transition period between now and 2025, which will allow time for the needs of our employees and for the community to properly prepare for that 2025 time deadline. During this time, we are committed to continuing supporting our employees and the community, including Grover Beach. We will provide incentives to retain our employees. We do not want them to leave. We need them to continue. And I know my time is up, but I'm
Go ahead and continue.
We will continue to provide a retraining and redevelopment program to facilitate redeployment of the plant personnel to other company positions once 2025 comes. In addition, we'll provide them with a very handsome severance package as well as the retention package in order to retain them. We'll provide until 2025 continued property tax payments through the county at the current levels, even as the plant's value of depreciation is escalated. And we will provide continued charitable support as well to the community as we have in the past. We recognize this as a difficult decision for the community to comprehend and to digest. And we will also have some upcoming public listening sessions where we invite the public to come and also express their concerns or support or their voice in this matter. We thank all of you who have supported nuclear energy in the past and who continue to do so. And we appreciate your support for PG&E as a whole. Thank you for allowing me this time.
Thank you, Mr.
Daniels. If you have any questions, I'll hang out later.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. And if anyone's got any questions, you can ask them later. Sounds good. Cassandra Appleton.
Good evening, council members. My name is Cassandra Appleton. First off, I want to say I am very saddened by PG&E closing. That is very sad to me. Our community is losing a big asset. Number two, we absolutely need sidewalks in Grover Beach. My 13-year-old son, who's in a wheelchair, cannot get to where he needs to go safely. He has to be escorted on the streets with somebody with him because he can't go anywhere. There's no sidewalks for him. That's not fair. And then my main reason for coming today, I read something this afternoon that kind of got me a little irked and got me thinking. According to the Department of Justice, Slo Housing Connection has no revenue, assets, or no contributions listed. They have failed to provide tax exemption returns. They have failed to provide financial records. They have failed to provide a list of board of directors. Yet, and Adam Hill, a current supervisor, is married to the, I guess she's the executive director of housing, Slo Housing Connection. And this council deemed fit to give them a $100,000 grant, and $20,000 of that goes to staffing. Who is the staff? Do you know any of this? Because according to the Department of Justice, they have none of this information. So where was the audit? Where was the audit that was done to determine whether or not this grant was given properly to this organization? Where's that information? Because according to the Department of Justice, they don't have it. So where did you guys see it? Because I'm concerned about that. That to me is showing me that you guys are not being the good stewards that you're telling the citizens that you're being. My son is going without sidewalks in a street, but you're giving money on grants to somebody who does not provide the information they're legally supposed to provide. That's kind of disturbing, you guys. That's kind of disturbing.
Thank you, Ms. Appleton. I don't have any other speaker requests. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? Okay, let me close this to the public, bring back to the council. Mayor Pro Tem, did you have something? No? Oh, okay. This is like an auction. You got to be careful when you move around me. You're not... So I'm just we don't normally respond to public comment, and maybe I want to ask legal counsel and city manager regarding the last comment. Would it be appropriate for us to provide information, or is that something that...
As I understood the request, the lady was seeking information on how our decisions were made, and those are completely transparent and public. The item was approved and went to you, before you. There's a staff report. There is all the documentation is present. So a Public Records Act request for all the documents will provide with everything that the city has that pertains to this issue. I cannot speak for the Department of Justice, nor can I speak for the organization itself. I may be mistaken, but I think the $20,000 reference to administrative staff was our administrative costs, but Mr. Buckingham is here. He may correct me on that. But we have all the documents that are public record, which are available for review and available for requests should she desire to see them.
Thank you, legal counsel. Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. Just to clarify, I provide some more information. So first of all, there were three groups that received monies as part of the $186,000 in public service CDBG grant money that was transferred in your recent action. There's basically three steps, first of all, that will occur. First is those all three entities will have to enter into a subrecipient agreement with the CDBG or Housing and Community Development Department. That will lay out a detailed plan of the expectations, a detailed analysis of the programs that they're proposing. Once that's approved, second of all, there is no outlay of money directly by the city. The organizations will have to provide those services and then provide documentation, basically evidence to the city. We have a consultant that will review those, and ultimately the city would use those CDBG monies to reimburse any of those three groups only after it's been documented that the services provided were consistent with the CDBG criteria.
And that was approved by the state?
Correct. The community development block grants are federal program, federal guidelines, which are administered by the state through the Housing and Community Development Department.
And those monies could not have been used, could they have been used for any infrastructure, sidewalks, or anything of that nature?
No, they were not eligible for those expenses.
Very good. Thank you, sir. Okay. Let's move on to public hearings. We have no public hearings tonight. On our consent agenda, we have quite a few items on the consent agenda, and I'm not going to read every one. These are items that we typically take because they are routine, and we take them as a group. So do any members of the council want to pull any items from consent?
No? I just have a question on item number 10.
Okay, very good.
And I did send an email to the city manager earlier today, and my question had to do with this is the item regarding the Caltrans local assistance documentation authority delegation to the city engineer. And I was just curious as to whether we should be delegating that authority to the city manager, who then would then delegate it to the city engineer as he sees fit. So that would be the only question I would have for the council to consider, or whether it's appropriate to have it go directly to the city engineer through us.
So why don't we perhaps pull that item and put it after item number 12. Let's do that. Because okay. You're looking for a specific action, and so let's move it.
Okay. So are we ready for a motion on the remaining?
Yes, if you're prepared to make a motion, that would be great.
So then I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items 3 through 9 as presented.
Okay, very good. Is there a second?
I'll second.
There's a motion and a second. Is there any additional discussion on the motion? Donna, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you, Donna. Motion carries. Okay, let's move on to regular business. This is item number 11. This is an economic development strategy and selection of development prototype projects. Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. At the last council meeting in June, the council received a presentation from BAE Urban Economics on the draft work completed on the Economic Development Strategy update that they have been tasked to provide with us. BAE discussed the next steps, including the selection of two development prototype projects to assess financial feasibility. Based on that brief discussion, the council directed staff to bring the item back tonight for further discussion to select the two development prototype projects. As indicated in the scope of work, the purpose is to evaluate the financial feasibility of two prototype projects to assist with identifying potential gaps in project feasibility. Staff identified potential prototype projects on West Grand Avenue in the RFP based on adopted council policies to encourage redevelopment efforts along West Grand Avenue and in particular mixed-use projects. To inform the council's decision, staff requested BAE provide a recommendation on the two prototype projects that they believe would be the most beneficial in understanding the financial feasibility of future projects. So BAE is recommending a pro forma financial feasibility assessment for two hypothetical alternatives. The first development alternative would consist of a mixed-use project and a residential-only project developed on vacant land. And to clarify, this is one alternative. It just analyzes a mixed-use project and then, so a mixed-use project being a commercial component with residential, and then they would simply replace that commercial with additional residential units. So it's just a slight modification because both those projects are permitted on Grand Avenue in certain locations. So the second alternative would use the same project in that first alternative, but would analyze it assuming a current owner that has an existing underutilized building on a site producing income. So that alternative, existing buildings, income being generated as opposed to the first, which was a vacant property. So the second alternative would determine if it was financially feasible for an existing property in order to demolish that income producing property in order to redevelop the site with this more intensive development, the mixed-use or all-residential project of alternative one. So BAA thought this would be useful information, in part because the city does have many underutilized properties on Grand Avenue. The purpose of preparing a performer for the prototype projects is to determine if a project is financially feasible for a developer to construct based on today's market conditions. If a project is not financially feasible, BAA will do sensitivity analysis, which is they will calculate what amount the rents need to rise to in order for the project to become financially feasible. So we get to see at what point, if they're not financially feasible today, they could become financially feasible. And the purpose of all this is so with that information, the council could consider appropriate policies to incentivize development if, in fact, they were not financially feasible. So we're bringing the council three alternatives tonight. Select the recommendations provided by BAE. Second, the council could select alternative projects. Or third, provide alternative direction to staff. So in conclusion, staff is recommending the council discuss the selection of the two prototype projects and provide direction to staff.
You done?
I'm done. I'm sorry.
Let's see if there's any questions of staff. Barbara, you have anything?
I drove up and down Grand trying to visualize spaces where either of these projects could be introduced, and I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think we have specific areas that it could be used in. But I'm wondering why these are underused to begin with. Is it because the land cost is too high to develop it further, or because rent is too high?
Well, that's one reason why it would be interesting to have the analysis done. But I think from staff's perspective, one of the challenges is if you are an absentee owner, and there are quite a few on Grand Avenue that have an existing building, they're generating income, and I'm stereotyping, but if that person is older, this is an income source. And so to replace that income source, they could redevelop the property, which this would provide some insight to whether or how feasible that is. But also, if you are producing income to sell that property, then what would you do to replace that income? And typically the answer is you 1031 exchange, you, within a certain time frame, reinvest that money into another income-producing property. So then the question is, why? What's the incentive to even do that? So this would hopefully answer the question of, from a development standpoint at least, why they wouldn't pursue intensifying the property.
Will they be actually contacting the owners and discussing the idea with them?
Not likely, only to the extent that they need to understand the market variables. What are the land prices? What are the rents provided for commercial or residential development today? What are the construction costs? And again, this won't be it's the corner of 8th and Grand. It will mm-hmm. be hypothetical, but it will reflect what we see out there today.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Jeff?
And I guess to kind of continue that line of questioning, why would we do a hypothetical analysis when we have several projects that we can legitimately ask those same questions of with people who have either expressed interest to the city or have developed some set of feasibility documentation and so we but haven't moved forward yet?
Well, if we had the names of those people or developers, I think it would be interesting to pass the names along to BAE. But the best that I can answer this without them being present is that it really is a generic look. It's why are we not seeing projects redevelop on Grand Avenue, and not necessarily a specific site or details, but is discussed in the staff report. Since the vision plan was adopted in 2004, it's been the council's goal to have redevelopment on Grand Avenue, and it's specifically more mixed use. And we haven't seen that, and we've been through a recession and other things. But this was to at least document today, is it a market feasibility issue? Does it pencil? Or are there other factors that might be involved that are causing businesses not to redevelop today?
And I think that goes to my second question, because it's it feels like we're rehashing some of the same conversations that have been held previously. So how do we take that conversation and say people are not developing on Grand Avenue, and not have a not have a generic conversation, but have a specific conversation? So, I mean, I guess I tried to express that in the presentation last time. Is like, how do we take the hypothetical educational economic strategy and actually make it something that works for Grover? And if this is within this context and when they're within their scope of work, maybe that's a hypothetical question, but it's what I've asked so far. So I don't know if that's something you answer or we answer.
Yeah, I would just add that if we come up with a hypothetical project that's 20,000 square feet of land and it's 10 residential units, let's say, you could extrapolate that to what's the per unit cost that you can pay for the land. So you can go next door to the 30,000 square foot lot and you can extrapolate, okay, the numbers would be the same.
Okay, and so from that perspective, we're going to have building department costs, we're going to have water costs, we're going to have sewer costs, we're going to have, and these are the types of costs that they're going to say are burdened on the developer to do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we've got an actual project that someone has started to develop or look at, could we not then say this is your anticipated fees through a conversation that we're having with BAE, we can actually tell you for this particular project, this is what it's going to cost. Realize that that is something that can be extrapolated to other owners, but we know from a decision-making standpoint, it cost X to do that. So, and if that's too expensive to do X, then we as a city either need to develop a different economic strategy or change land uses to make something. So that, in my opinion, does that not give us an opportunity to make more prudent decisions as to where or and what types of development we would have?
in a specific project versus a generic project?
It's realizing that the specific project is someone is already something that's already being thought of.
Right.
So, and because they as the developer have looked at what a project can handle versus, okay, that piece of land can have 24 residential units.
And I guess all I can say is I think that the hypothetical project will be one that maximizes the development potential, because most developers would approach a project with trying to maximize the development potential.
So let me help a little bit here. So I think what I'm hearing, Jeff, is if we identify these two model projects, is the cost of doing business in the city going to be part of that modeling, meaning obviously permit costs, whether it's building and planning and all of that? Are we going to take a look at that as part of that analysis, which then tells us these are the things we can control?
Yeah. Yes, it would. Pro forma would include your direct and your indirect costs, the direct cost being construction and your indirect cost being all city fees.
Okay. Anything else?
I think that's all for now.
Okay. Let me look to my left. Miriam, you have a question?
I don't know. I do, but I don't know if it. Anyway.
All questions are good questions.
I guess in my mind, I think what you're asking and what they plan to do is come up with a general plan, and then we could maybe do the legwork out and speak with specific people and maybe use it with them. I guess my question/concern is I would like this hypothetical plan to include studio units, because I think that's something that's really lacking around here. And also thinking of the project that's going on now around Elm and Grand, that is, they are in Oro Grande where they're getting the chain restaurants. I would like our hypothetical building to have a space big enough that we could have like a Panera or a Chipotle or something like that, maybe even with drive-through capacity for people like me. Don't want to get out of the car.
But you walk everywhere in the city.
But when I want to eat, I just want to eat. I walk everywhere, but, you know.
With the stroller. With the stroller.
When you're in a rush, you need that. So I just hope that they will think in that way, because I think a lot of times, for whatever reason, Grover is not thought of for those type of projects, yet we're a mile away from a ton of new projects like that. So I just want to be sure those things are incorporated.
So if we're talking comments, I have comments.
Sure.
Okay. So then I too want to express my interest in definitely residential of all sorts, because we are sore, as we all know, we are sorely lacking in that. So definitely in the workforce type of residential. So studios and one bedrooms in particular. So I think that is extremely important. So if you could pass that along.
So let's see if we can give you guys some direction. And I don't have any speaker request slips from me. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address the item before the council? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back. And here's my comments. Unfortunately, I had missed a presentation in the last meeting because I, for the first time in 12 years sitting on this council, had to leave halfway through. So I'm playing a little catch up. But when I see this, I think there's a couple of things, because I know we've talked about this in the past, and we've talked about what are some of our challenges. Some of our challenges are we got narrow lots and multiple owners, and assembling land has been a real challenge to that. And then we don't even start talking about the parking, the whole issue of parking. When parking takes up about a third of your land, you know, that becomes a challenge. And I think, Bruce, you alluded to this earlier, is having multiple properties on Grand where you've got absent landlords or someone's owned it for a long time, and how do you get them to do something differently? And the perfect example comes up where Ron's nursery is, I think, for the longest had sat there, and we had looked at that. But I think for this exercise, maybe we can, I don't know if it's two or three. In my mind, I'm thinking, what I'm hearing is, let's do a mixed-use project. But let's do one that we think has a real chance of if we provide the correct information, that owner may be incentivized to move forward or partner with someone. So I think that is a natural to say, let's look at the northeast corner. Yeah, that's right. Of Grand and 4th Street. I think there's a used car dealership there, and then on the other side is a formerly bar. I don't know if it was a restaurant, club. So it's interesting because there are probably 7 smaller lots, but the assessors probably put 1 or 2 parcel numbers on it. But I think that has a unique opportunity. And I know in a former council, we looked at whether it was a mixed-use project that had retail on the bottom floor and 80 to 100 rooms of hotels on the top. So I think that is in line with the vision that we've talked about. So that's one. I think the other one is, and I hear you, Karen and Miriam, is perhaps we look at something that's sort of like the Mance or Active Senior Living that's in San Luis Obispo. Because I know we've talked about, let's not create this huge strip mall in the city of Grover Beach where everyone's racing, and so let's create some, get some eyes on the street. So I don't know where that might be. That could be on the corner of, let's say, 6th and Grand, where you've got, what's in there right now, Jeff? It used to be a mattress shop. It's, you know what I'm thinking? Karen, right across, right in front of Little Bits.
Linda McClure's.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, American Property.
To me, that makes a lot of sense to look at that and say, if that was all residential, what would that look like? Is that a combination of units that are affordable by design? That might be some studios and things of that nature. So you can either look at it as an active senior living complex, or you can look at it in the other as more of an affordable housing, whether it's studios or a combination. So I think those are, to me, seem to be two good templates or models for us to say, hey, if we're really going to give ourselves a chance to reinvigorate Grand Avenue, let's look at these two. So I don't know if anyone's got anything
to do. The senior, both of those ideas are great, I think.
Okay. You guys good over here?
Especially on the senior living, the senior, you could actually have a senior center in the bottom and senior living in the top half.
Yeah.
And a drive-through Chipotle.
Yeah. And a drive-through for seniors.
Well, I had about 5, and I'm trying to show some discipline because you know, the other thing we could talk about is where Spoon Trade is. I think we've got some real synergy going on down there, and so what happens on 2nd Street where we've got the ATV rentals and that, you know, is that a, there I say microbrewery. I said that in public, didn't I? Anyway, I think this is just to give us a taste of what it is to see if there is a unique opportunity to have a general, I don't know if it's general feasibility study to see, in fact, what it would take to put something there. Or even if it was the wonderful Grover Beach Inn. Anyway,
that'd be a great location as well.
I know, right?
So in absence of having our consultant here to respond to these prototype projects, I would imagine that they are trying to arrive at the highest and best use. They're trying to, as any developer would look at, maximizing income. So that probably includes, well, what's the right mix of residential product to meet the market? And quite honestly, I'm not 100% sure that their task is to say there's a market for studios and 1 bedrooms and 2 bedrooms. I mean, we could certainly say there's a mix of residential to kind of take that into consideration. But as far as, you know, whether it's active senior living or not, it is just a multifamily residential project.
Okay.
And I think, you know, that is definitely what they wanted to look at.
I think the distinction becomes, if it is not senior, I think the density is different, because I believe we changed the codes that said if it's a senior predominantly, then you can go up to 40 units per acre versus 20 units per acre. So that makes a big difference in whether someone wants to invest or not, I would think.
yes, certainly increased density is going to increase returns.
So tell the consultant we'd like three for the price of two. How's that? Jeff, yes?
Actually, I was going to add a wrinkle into all of this, as I typically try and do as well, in the fact that we've got great projects. I'm almost wanting to make sure, and Bruce, you can tell me if this is either in or out of potential scope, is that once we know whether these projects are developable, so if that's a term, and whether they're economically feasible to have within the city, those folks that are going to then potentially live there are going to need some level of services. So what is the next step from the economic driver to say what services are not being provided to those folks? I mean, if we have a senior facility, we're going to need a laundry facility on site or some other medical facility, mm-hmm. that might be a need in there. So is that also part of their overall scope to say, okay, we've got these projects, hypothetical or not, but those are then going to drive other businesses into the community, mm-hmm. and how do we quantify those, and how do we attract those and position ourselves to lack of a better term, have the city get out of their way from a streamlined process so they can do what they do and benefit the overall community.
So candidly, I'm not so sure that's really what they had in mind when they put a cost to the financial feasibility. However, what you're talking about should be addressed in the overall economic development strategy. I mean, they may not analyze particular types of retailers like the Buxton study did many years ago, but I think that is what we're trying to drive towards, and that is what types of users are not represented in Grover Beach, and therefore which ones would we ideally like to attract. So I think in the bigger scope, that is part of what the council is trying to get to in this economic development strategy. And it may not be specific in the strategy. It may end up being a policy that we need to further analyze that.
Okay. So for tonight, direction is mixed use, that is retail, I don't know if you can, is retail office and rooms, hotel rooms. That's on Grand and Fourth, because I think we looked at whether it was three or four stories, I don't recall. I think the second one is that we look at multiple family housing on Grand between 6th and 7th on the north side. And if they're bored, then they can look at active senior living or something where the Grover Beach Inn is. Because, I mean, that'd be interesting to see something on that. I mean, you're talking less than not even half a mile from the beach. I mean, there's a tremendous opportunity. And if we can get someone to give us a realistic picture of what's possible, I think that'd be helpful. And so just to add on to that, maybe if we get to a point where we think you are comfortable having some of these models, and maybe there could be a companion piece where staff could say, okay, if this was a project, this is what the fees might be. And that's kind of a discussion we can talk about later. Yeah. Matt, you have anything?
Yeah, just through the mayor, I think this is the direction the staff was looking for to help really clarify expectations for these two projects, and we will go forward accordingly. I think it's important also that we don't rehash the past, that we bring in today's market conditions, market right. factors, and the cost of doing business. So that's an important factor to make sure that this is reflecting the economy today and where we are going forward. And lastly, I'll add that the interviews with the stakeholders will help give us some real-world data on property owners and other key interest leaders to make sure that we reflect those conditions in our analysis, and we'll be doing that beginning this next week.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that summary, Matt. I think we're all in alignment on that. So we have given staff direction. So with that, let's move to item number 12. This is a request for direction on drafting an ordinance to regulate commercial medical marijuana uses. So this is going to be a tag team presentation, and who's in the batter's box and who's on deck? Okay, Mr. Buckingham.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. I will go ahead and be giving the presentation tonight, and then if the council has follow-up questions, both Chief Peters and City Attorney Kazanowicz and our city manager will also be available for questions. So to start with some background this evening, in January of this year, the council amended the existing ordinance that prohibits medical marijuana dispensaries and commercial cultivation. However, at that time, the council indicated a willingness to consider an amendment that would allow for medical marijuana dispensaries and commercial cultivation. And the council subsequently added in their fiscal year 17 council work program to, quote, consider zoning and taxing options for medical marijuana businesses within the city. So recently, staff has met with four groups that are requesting a municipal code amendment to allow a variety of commercial medical marijuana uses, including dispensaries, cultivation, manufacturing, laboratory testing, and mobile delivery. The four groups that we've met with are the Monarch, Beachside Health and Wellness Center, Point Bay Distributors, and Elite Care. And all of those proposals were provided in your packet with the staff report. Prior to proceeding with this work program item, staff is requesting the council provide direction on whether to proceed with drafting an ordinance that would regulate medical marijuana uses, and if directed to proceed, the process and timing of moving forward. So staff has provided a list of steps, basically going through the process for preparing a draft ordinance for council consideration. The first, community workshop to allow public input on medical marijuana uses. This is an optional step that the council could elect to move forward with or incorporate into the next step, which is a council meeting to provide direction to staff in the location, types of uses, limitations, everything under the sun about how you might want to regulate commercial uses. The third step would be for the council meeting to review a draft outline of an ordinance prepared by staff. Something like we did with special events permit. But I think more importantly in this case, why it's also important is that by providing some direction to staff and ultimately as we draft an ordinance for the Planning Commission as well to get some input from the council on where they would like to go. The next step would be for then the staff to draft the ordinance and prepare the appropriate CEQA document.
Mr. Mayor, if I might. So, yes. Bruce, I see you're trying to advance a slideshow that is not on the screen behind you.
The eyes in the back of my head.
There you go.
To review. And we are now there.
There we are.
The next step, the Planning Commission would conduct a public hearing to provide a recommendation to the City Council. Next, the City Council would conduct a public hearing to consider the first reading of the ordinance. Then the next step would be for the council to prepare or to have a public hearing to adopt the ordinance. And like with all ordinances, they do not take effect until 30 days after that adoption by the council. At this time, staff's estimating the process to take approximately 6 months from begin to adoption. We would also note that it could delay completion of other council work program items to move forward with this effort. As far as a tax measure, staff wanted to provide a little bit of background. And so the processing or the process of at least discussing a taxation of medical marijuana uses could occur concurrently with this regulatory ordinance. The ability of the city to tax the manufacturing or sale of medical marijuana products requires approval by a majority of the Grover Beach voters and a general election ballot. So the next general election is in November of 2016, and the following one would be November of 2018. We also provided some information in the staff report. There are several cities in California that have already approved tax measures, and several more cities will be placing it on the ballot in November, and we're aware of both the city of Santa Barbara and King City will be moving forward with those initiatives in November. In order for the city to place a tax measure on the November ballot, the council would need to adopt a resolution basically at the August 1st council meeting. That resolution would contain the draft ordinance language, and that would be forwarded to the county who needs to receive that by August 12th in order to place it on
the general election ballot in November. At such time, a ballot measure was approved. The city would receive revenues based on the amount of the tax and the number of businesses that would ultimately be operating, so can't really provide you much of an estimate at this point. If the council wants to pursue a tax measure, staff requests that the council provide direction on whether this would include both medical marijuana and or recreational use. As far as the fiscal impacts, the council, if the council directs staff to proceed with a regulatory ordinance, staff's estimating the cost would be about $30,000. If the council elected also place a tax measure on the ballot, the total costs are estimated at about $25,000. As I just mentioned, the regulatory ordinance would also impact staff resources, and if the council elected to proceed, staff recommends returning to the council with more information about the timing of other work programs and potential resource needs. We also mentioned another option for the council consideration as far as funding would be for the applicants to fund all or a portion of the direct costs and or staff time involved in drafting the ordinance. So finally, staff has identified a range of alternatives for the council to consider. First would be identifying that drafting a regulatory marijuana, medical marijuana ordinance and or tax ordinance is an immediate priority and direct staff to start that process. Council could also identify that drafting a regulatory medical marijuana ordinance and tax ordinance is important, but delay that until after the November 2016 ballot, in part to see what happens with the recreational use approval. Third, council, you could identify drafting a regulatory medical marijuana ordinance or tax is not a priority and table until such time you decide that you want to move forward. You could also direct staff to schedule a public workshop to receive public input prior to making a decision on whether to move forward. And lastly, you can provide any alternative direction to staff that you'd like. So with that, in conclusion, it's recommended the council provide direction to staff this evening.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Buckingham. Is there anything from city manager or the police chief?
In reference to the law enforcement aspect, obviously we're concerned about the community safety as the council is, and so we would take or have the council take into mindset the items that need to be considered, whether it be the location of such facilities, their distance and proximities to schools and residential zones and so forth, and as well as security of such facilities and the police department staff time in reference to responding to any facilities calls for service or the calls for service maybe in the affected areas, in addition to the regulatory actions that the police department would have to take on, such as background investigations, site security visits, inspections, and so forth. So, and that would all have to be determined in whatever ordinance is developed, if that's the case the council goes for.
Very good. Karen, you have any questions?
I do. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Just a couple to start with. First, if we were to delay until after the election, what do you see that the benefit would be from that?
If the council moved forward today, you would likely direct us to only draft an ordinance that would address medical marijuana since recreational use has not been approved. If you waited into November and it was approved and the council wanted to go in that direction, then you could draft an ordinance that would regulate both of those uses.
Thank you. So if we were to then draft a local tax measure, I believe that I had read somewhere, and I think it was in the Monarch attachment, they had alluded to the fact that if we were to draft something for a local tax measure, that that would supersede anything that the state might go forward with. Would that be the case?
I'll defer to our city attorney.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, council members, I think the powers are separate. City's action does not supersede the state action. It is likely that the state will be taxing this activity as well, but city has the ability and the power to go to the voters and issue or have taxes imposed through the voters' action.
So it would be on top, basically. It would just be an additional tax.
Or the state tax would end up being the additional tax, depending on which one would come first.
Two taxes, basically.
One thing I wanted to just briefly clarify that the community development director pointed out accurately, and that is that currently the recreational commercial activity for marijuana is not yet or is not permitted. Whether it will be or not, we will find out after November, at least this round. One of the options that exists that is that you direct staff to move forward with language that simply says that proposes to tax any legal use of marijuana, which would currently would only include medical. If in fact the voters decide that recreational use is something that would be permitted in California under the law, it would become a legal use and would then fall under the verbiage of the taxing ordinance or even the regulatory ordinance. There are various complications that, that are involved, especially in the regulatory and the zoning ordinances, but with regard to taxing, that is an approach that, that some of the other cities are taking.
Thank you. I think I'll leave it at that for now.
Okay. Barbara, you have anything?
I haven't formulated anything right at the moment.
Okay, very good. Miriam?
So if we don't put the tax on this November ballot and we wait until 2018, what happens if between 2016 and 2018 we decide as a city that we are going to get our regulatory ordinance drafted and get these businesses up and running? We would be unable to tax them until 2018. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay. And do we need to, in the ordinance we propose, name the percentage of tax or just say tax?
The calculation of tax is something that would come before you for discussion. Various methodologies are being used, anything from just a flat number for manufacturing concerns, just an annual sum. Square footage is being taxed with whether it's the canopy, which is a little more difficult to measure, or simply the use space. In other words, if you have a license for 22,000 square feet, which is the maximum under state law right now, you're being taxed on 22,000 square feet of usage, whether you're using it or not. And there are scaled proposals where the tax would first 5,000 feet would be taxed at a different rate than the next 20,000 feet or 17,000 feet. So the range of options for how you impose the tax is pretty wide. And that would be, you know, obviously subject to discussion today and subject to discussion if the council should decide to bring this item, instruct the staff to bring this item before you for additional, more focused conversations. We do have ordinances that are prepared that will be assuming action by other city councils that will be moving forward to the ballot. So again, the estimates are rather modest for the work that has already been done. So you basically, as any city, because all these things are becoming public record, there are benefits to looking at how other people are doing it, Santa Barbara being one, King City being another. There are other cities that are considering these things.
So we would need to have our methodology down within the next few weeks if we wanted to.
You would need to adopt a resolution that would put the ballot measure on the ballot at the next council meeting on the August 1st council meeting.
And let's say that we go forward with the tax ordinance on the ballot, but then we then get to having this big meeting for the public and they are not in support. Just because we've gone forward with the tax method, do we need to keep pushing forward, or what? How does that work?
Yeah, the way that it works, or at least under this proposed scenario, is that you would put a ballot measure on the ballot, That would also include a verbiage of an ordinance, which would then be adopted, should you desire to do so, if the voters tell you that you can tax marijuana uses. So what goes to the ballot is a ballot measure. Shall the Grover Beach Municipal Code be amended to include a tax for commercial marijuana activities as follows? With it would be a proposed draft ordinance. Assuming that the voters decide that they want to tax cannabis in Grover Beach, an ordinance would come before you for first reading, second reading, adoption. Should the council at that point in time decide, for whatever reasons, that it really isn't interested in having commercial activity in Grover Beach, you would need not to take action on the ordinance, and basically you would, the tax would not go into effect because there would be no legal activity in the city that would be taxable. Very frankly, the downside of that is that you've now revved up the voters. They've given you something a tool to approve, and if you back out of it, next time around you may have a little harder time getting something before them or getting something passed. So that's a balance of consideration, something to think about.
So you're saying in order to have the tax ordinance on the ballot, we need to have a draft regulatory ordinance as well to include with it?
No.
No.
The ordinance that we just would reference. Include in it is the taxing ordinance, the one that would be taxing the uses.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Jeff?
Thank you for that. Kind of piggybacking on that same line of thought from Miriam, does if we proceeded down the tax actually, let me back up a second. If we decide to move forward with this and we just to choose between either a taxing ballot measure or some other level of business license, so what would happen if we moved forward with the tax initiative in 2018? What mechanism would the city have to generate revenue from this industry and these businesses in the interim?
Other than recovery of costs that are incurred in processing of the applications and any other activity related to that use, including, for example, fees for police protection or police response, et cetera, there is no revenue-generating mechanism that's available other than a tax. And in order to pass a tax, you would need to go before the voters.
So as part of the hypothetically moving forward with this, we could not put a business license tax similar to our card rooms, where there's an annual licensing fee for a card table, and we make that we move forward with a per plant tax or a, like you said, a square foot tax or something of that basis, so that's not permissible? Or is there something that we could write that would make that permissible?
Nothing that would not need to go before the voters. In other words, any type of a licensing fee would have to be basically based on costs and recovery, not a revenue generating.
So it wouldn't be part of what would become our master fee schedule?
It would not. It could become part of the master fee schedule if you go to the voters and have it approved.
Okay. I think I'm missing the nuance there, but
it's any time a fee generates revenue generally, and I'm speaking in very general terms, it basically is considered a tax, and the council does not have the power without voters' approval to tax.
Right. So, but we do have the right with a master fee schedule update to add fees and so forth. So you're saying that added fee is it would be a use on an occupant. It wouldn't be a tax on the business. Yeah. Reading that incorrectly?
The fee to recover the costs incurred by the city as a result of the use would be appropriately in a master fee schedule, and it would not be subject to a voter's action. But it would not be revenue generating. It would be recovering the costs that the city incurs as a result of the activity that is allowed.
Yeah, just in contrast, what Santa Barbara is going to the voters with this fall is a 10% tax on gross receipts for medical use and then 20% for non-medical use on gross receipts versus recovering the cost of service, as the city attorney described.
Okay, great. So then my only other question at this point is there's in the In the proposals, there's a series of either two to four different business entity types of, or different business uses, I guess, cultivation, manufacturing, testing, dispensary, mobile dispensary, and any number. So do we need to move forward on one or all, or can we say yes to some and no to others? What's the thought on that from an ordinance standpoint?
So from the ordinance standpoint, a regulatory and a zoning ordinance, whether it's one or two that are parallel to each other, could cover any or all of those uses, and that's a decision that would be potentially fleshed out during the six-month process and the public review process and the public input process. So that's more of a regulatory, just like any other use that is being subject to a conditional use permit. There are regulations, there are conditions, and there's a process by which to put it before you for final approval. So those issues could be dealt with as you move forward with the process.
So what I would suggest, Jeff, is let's hold that thought. When we get to discussion, we can give staff some very clear direction, whether it is to not move forward or whether it is to move forward, and how we would like them to do that. Okay? So let me begin by saying I did want to say that I've met with three of the four groups. So I had met with the Monarch Group, Point Bay Distributors, and I know they're associated with Surterra, as well as Elite Care, and I find all these individuals were very professional, have thought this through, and I know that when we had this discussion last year, probably right before Christmas or somewhere thereabouts, a lot of folks had come forward and said, hey, if you are sincere about looking at regulating not only the medicinal side, but putting in a framework, should the voters in November choose to approve recreational. So I think meeting with them was very informative and enlightening for me. So I did want to disclose that. I do want to get a clarification on page one of the staff report, because it talks about having applications and really no one has submitted any fees. So do we technically have applications?
Yeah, I think no, we don't really have any formal applications because no fees were accepted. And again, staff did that in light of knowing that the council wanted to potentially entertain this.
Okay. So, and thank you so much for clarifying on the community workshop, saying that is optional. I was just kind of curious where'd that come from, because, I
wasn't at the meeting in January, but I believe it was something that the council threw out as a potential option again.
So maybe there was a little something lost in translation. I think the council was really talking about if we move forward utilizing those professionals that are out there to help provide input so that we can craft something that is effective, that not only looks at this as a growing industry, not as a sinister industry, some would like to paint it, and also a way to regulate it and protect the folks who live and commerce in the city. So I think putting it as optional, we'll have more discussion about that later. You know, I'm not going to get too much into the tax measure. I'm always reluctant to put a tax on the ballot for anything. I think when this November ballot's going to be, it's going to have quite a few initiatives and measures on it. But I know we can have some conversation on that. But Bruce, in the staff report, it talked about being able to get reimbursed for the city being able to get reimbursed because when you identify what the fiscal impact are of putting together an ordinance, putting together a tax measure to go on the ballot, it's pretty substantial. Is that a common thing that occurs? And maybe Martin can weigh in when he gets an opportunity. So I'm just trying to figure out. I saw that and it kind of struck me as odd that if we're talking about something that's universal, why would we ask a certain group to reimburse us for those efforts? I'm just going to get some clarification.
Again, purely at the council's discretion.
Okay. Have you seen anything like this, Martin?
I think that to the extent that any of the potential changes are being driven by a single applicant, there's probably a good connection.
Yeah.
It is more often, as you identified, it is more often found in when you're coming in for an amendments to an existing situation.
Yeah.
this is a new ordinance. It will be a new law in Grover Beach, as Bruce identified. You know, it will be up to your discretion on how you allocate and how you request that city staff allocates the certain costs. Certainly, it would not be out of the ordinary to have some of the costs passed on to anybody who is an applicant, okay, or will become an applicant as a result. But I would be cautious about allocating all of the costs of that venture on the applicant.
Yeah, fair enough. Because thank you for that. Because I know I'm used to seeing if it's one applicant coming forward saying here's a specific project, and inherently it's tied to a legislative change, whether it's zoning or land use. So thank you for that. And then my final question is, I know when we discussed this back in December, we had some discussion regarding personal use in residential areas. We certainly, are you envisioning that we need to firm that up and give further direction on that as well, even though that was not part of the staff report?
I don't think that at this point in time staff has any necessity for changing the existing status quo on the personal use, and state law controls it. We've discussed it with you in December. At this point in time, what's before you is activities that would be purely commercial in nature.
Okay.
And unless and until we discover something that would cross the line and cross over into some potential personal use, I don't think that if you direct us to move forward, that's going to be a focus of staff's attention.
Okay. So I don't think there's a discussion we should have, because I know we did have some discussions about if that we did not want to preclude someone from obviously being in conflict with state law, but we had talked about maybe regulating the size and whether it be that it would be indoors in a structure that has proper ventilation and proper security. But that's something we'll have to talk about further as we go. Okay, so those are all the questions and comments that we've got.
John.
Yes, Barbara.
One more. Uh-huh. Will the ordinance also still allow limited in-home cultivation for medical marijuana?
I think that is, I think, according to staff, I think that was what the discussion we had. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would. I think the one thing we have to discuss as a council is, do we want to try and put some additional, you know, because you can see in what's been submitted by the groups that have come forward, some have shown a model ordinance and called out a use permit required, which means there are additional stipulations on that. Mm-hmm. And I don't see why we would not think that way along residential areas, especially if we're talking about protecting our residential neighborhoods.
Right.
Right. Okay. But we're not saying not allow any, but allow any with some sort of requirements or standards.
You're
on
right.
It.
Okay. Okay.
So I see a lot of folks in the audience, but I don't have any blue speaker requests for them. So are you all just observing? And does anyone want to? I knew people are holding blue slips away. Hand them to the city attorney or the city manager. See, when you do this, I can't project what time we're going to be ending tonight. Wow. It's all good. We're going to start right at the top, right? There you go.
So it would be inappropriate for me to ask to go past 11?
It would be.
No.
All right.
No.
There you go. 3 minutes. Matthew Schwett, followed by Sam Schwett. Yeah, you guys are a tag team. You decide who you want to go first.
I'll just go
first.
Okay. This is my first time here in this building. It's nice to be here, and I thank you guys for your time. I am here representing Certera, and I hope you all got our presentations. Certera is an East Coast company based out of Atlanta. Our narrative is in the packet, so I won't repeat that for you guys. My job is in government affairs. And that brought me out to Sacramento a lot, actually, over the past 6 months. And, you know, I've also worked in places like Richmond, Virginia, Columbia, South Carolina, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Atlanta, Georgia. So it is needless to say, refreshing to see the political environment in Sacramento, particularly as it relates to medical cannabis. And on that note, Surterra is strictly a medical cannabis company. So we kind of came of age in the East Coast markets where you have very limited licensure. For example, in Florida, where we have a license, there were only five initially given. The number's now been raised to six through administrative challenge. But in the systems that we have kind of grown up in, there is no flower. Everything is non-smokable. You know, there are pretty onerous testing requirements. And so when we came back out to Sacramento, really starting last winter, early spring, we were impressed with the recent legislation. We were impressed with the legislators who made the push to put the regulatory system in place. And we felt like it was something we really wanted to be a part of. As I mentioned, or as I put in the packet, we have a partnership and kind of an ownership stake in a lab in Berkeley. The lab is C3 Labs, and that's where we do all of our research and product development. We really believe in those guys. We think they're kind of industry leading, kind of setting the standard. And through those guys, that's kind of been our anchor in California. As I've spent more time out here, and as I've enjoyed the, you know, the beautiful California weather as opposed to being in Philadelphia or Washington, D.C., I've kind of looked at how we can expand our business in California and honestly just get medical products to people who want them. Because, for example, Senator Lackey, one of the gentlemen who got the bill passed, you know, he told a moving story about one of his friends who had breast cancer, and she went into a dispensary, and it was essentially a huge head shop, right? So she couldn't get medicine because she didn't feel comfortable. So Surterra is interested in getting treatment to folks like that. As you guys probably know, the regulatory system in California works kind of local and then up to the state. As of right now, we don't have a permit issued to Surterra Holdings or Surterra Therapeutics. We do, through our facility in Berkeley, manufacture products, and then theoretically we will be able to distribute from there, but that situation is not ideal. So as my 3 minutes is coming to a close, I just want to express the interest of Surterra Holdings in, you know, having, you know, and making an investment here in Grover Beach. We're looking for a place to set up a secure manufacturing facility. We don't want to be near a major city. We want to be centrally located between major markets. And we think that Grover provides an opportunity to do a lot of the things we're looking for.
Great, thank you.
Oh, Sam. And as a last thing, I'm sorry. In our division, we have folks with, like, I have a law student, a buddy, and as a project, he has been working on a sample ordinance. Wow. So, and a lot of it's pulled from some language from Berkeley. I shared kind of a draft of this with Matt and the city attorney. So if anyone's interested, I'll give you a copy, and we're a resource for you guys if you need anything.
Very good. So, Matt, you have a copy of that already? Okay. Great.
Cool. And I'll just leave these.
Are those extras?
These are extras.
Yes.
They're updated as well.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Good evening.
My name's Sam Sweat. I represent Point Bay Distributors. You left out the most important license, and that's for a licensed distributor. And so that's really our interest here, to become an independent entity operating in medical cannabis and distributing business to business. I moved here about 2 years ago. I've got a background in medical marketing and nutraceuticals. I've enjoyed talking with some of you here, and so we just see it as an honor to be here and you know, the ones that I haven't met to meet today, participate in this, listen in. I learned a lot about Grover Beach and Parks and Rec and public transportation. And so basically what we're looking to do is we're about the operations and security, because this is really, distribution is a entity that's not currently operating. And so what's going on is we're kind of aligning ourselves with forward-minded and responsible players in the industry. So right now we're a startup company, and we're basically networking with other responsible players in the industry. We see a lot of value in operating here in a centrally located region. And like Matt had explained, it starts with the local municipality and then eventually up to state licensing. So that's really our interest. We have a team in place. Some of those team members have been in meetings and connected with some of you. Very security-focused, operations-driven. One of our chief operating officer has 30 years' experience in federal, state, and local law enforcement and government. Our VP of Ops is also high-level military, ex-military. So we believe we can move product to product, business to business responsibly. We are also looking at this as almost a technology firm because we believe that there's going to be a lot of transporting of data business to business, and we just look forward to the opportunity to possibly work with you guys.
So. Great. Thank you, Mr. Sweat. Cynthia Gonzalez, followed by Tammy Peluso.
Good evening, Mayor, Chamber, staff members, council members. Yes, thank you for the opportunity given. We've approached this body and having a candid discussion about the importance of having this particular type of medicinal products presented in your community, and most importantly for the folks in need. We are the folks that present the hands-on work, and there's threefold to our business proposal that we presented to this group this evening, and it consists of not just the delivery, but actually having a retail facility here in an ideal location so that all ages could certainly be benefiting from our services that we'd be offering. We feel that the most important capacity, besides the distributorship and the manufacturing, because if you take a look at our website, what we do is we don't have a vast level of products that we offer. We have a very select few. We've gone over about 5,000 to 10,000 different product items and found a host of items that meet our criteria. We work with a team of medical experts that have 22 years experience collectively. And the body of work from the operational staff has 44 years in medicinal marijuana with various different states that have been affected by this particular medicine. When I say that, I mean we have case studies, efficacy, protocols. Mm-hmm. The real important day-to-day minutia details that if you walk into a location today, 99.9% of the time you will not get anything close to the information. We came from the Bay Area, and our intention in moving here, which we did in December, was to hopefully see this particular type of body and present it in your city. We feel the value, since our age, demographic age bracket is a 45-plus market, not to say that the younger generation don't have chronic conditions and require certain types of medicinal value that would integrate with their Western medicine, but we do feel it very strongly that our particular type of business and our business model would be a sterling example of what medical marijuana, medical cannabis is to be in the state of California. I say that because myself, I've had a card for the last 22 years, and I've been dealing with pain for 44 years, so I have been imbibing in medical cannabis for 44 years, and I think as I shared with this board, with this body as well, that I've still maintained myself. I worked for corporate America, Fortune 500 corporations. I was in director and management positions. And I functioned extremely well. Had my largest staff was I had over 125 people working for me. We have management, marketing, research background. That's what the founder and myself are partnering with. We're also aligning ourselves with the most efficient and the most knowledgeable medical staff members. And I say medical staff members, not the kind that you walk in and pay $79 and get a medical recreation card. I mean medical doctors that would treat you for every other kind of condition that you're involved in. So we have a very, it's technology driven, but we feel that the ideal location here would be, have a side that that contains the retail aspect, an educational platform, and a consulting platform. Because one of the things that we would like to do is make sure that every single person that walks through that door has the benefit and the knowledge-based information so that they walk away with making a good decision for themselves. And if they have to have a reference to come back and speak to their family members or their medical doctors about what they're doing with their Western medicine and integrating this particular type of medicine, it's a huge zone. And there is very few people in the space that are actually representing that. We make up that 1% of the space that have been doing it, and we've been doing it for the last 7 years. So respectfully, we would greatly appreciate the opportunity to present that body of medical marijuana business to your community, great community. We are residents here nearby, and I see that I have 49 seconds remaining, or 50 seconds, I guess, making it brief. I want to thank all of you. We did have the good fortune of meeting with Mayor Scholes and of course, Chief and Bruce as well, and this was always going to be our end game, so to speak. This is supposed to be retirement because I have over 250 relatives that are here. So The other thing that's important, too, is that we will be employing bodies of members that will be well-trained and well-knowledgeable on the type of work that we'll be doing here in the community, so that there isn't that illusion of, you know, people are walking in and getting misinformation or not being satisfied with the experience, because it is an important science, it's an important medicine, and it has a value in every household. So we greatly appreciate your consideration of our company. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gonzalez. Tammy Peluso, followed by Matthew Bashweiner.
Good evening. Thank you for giving us this time tonight. I feel like I'm going to kind of repeat some of the things Cynthia said and maybe some of the other folks that will be up here, but one of the biggest reasons we're in this business is not to make money. We are in this to help people, so people get the right medicine, because my mother had breast cancer. We got the wrong kind of medicine for her in San Francisco, because there's a lot of people out there in this business trying to make money, and they don't put the patient first. And that's what we do first and foremost, is the patient is our number one goal. We definitely see a need here, living here in the community. We've touched a lot of hands, met a lot of people, and it's a lot about education, as you know. We're here for them. We'd love to answer questions, provide some educational platforms for them to come and learn more, so it's not something they're afraid of. Myself, I use medical cannabis to sleep. I'm a horrible sleeper, so I need some help. I get a good night's sleep with using it. I don't smoke it. I don't vape it. I take a capsule. I maybe eat an edible, something that most people don't even know exists. They think of, because it's such a big cultivation area that we're in, everybody automatically thinks it's all about a plant. It's not just about plants. The other thing that we would, you know, we see that there's a great need for the education, and as Cynthia mentioned, we do have doctors on staff. People can talk to them via the phone, via the internet, whatever it may be. But we also see in the future in our facility of actually having a doctor in person versus just via the phone or the internet. So with that, we're here for everybody. If you have more questions, any concerns, we're here for you. And thank you for your time.
Thank you for those comments. Matthew, followed by Sonny Molinax.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Matthew Bashmer. I'm a member of the Monarch. I want to thank you guys for listening to us tonight and hearing us out. The Monarch is a collaboration between cannabis business professionals and passionate patients. Our other member, Sunny herself, is a cancer survivor and a longtime patient. The Monarch's vision is to be a leader in the medical cannabis industry in California and help shape the evolving industry through our unwavering focus on health, wellness, and providing relief to those with debilitating medical conditions. We believe we are uniquely positioned for success, as we are well capitalized, and our principals own and operate medical marijuana businesses in Colorado and Illinois. Our chief compliance officer owns and operates the largest dispensary group in the state of Illinois, and I have 3 licenses to grow and manufacture cannabis products in the state of Colorado. Our management team has demonstrated a record of success in multiple industries, including energy, commercial real estate, marketing, and law. We're dedicated to operating in an unambiguously compliant and safe manner at all times, with a goal to educate our patients and the community at large on the science and proper usage of medical cannabis, promoting health-first policies and attitudes. Our planned facility is designed to be an extremely safe and secure facility with zero impact on residential community and little to no environmental impact. We will recycle 90% of our water usage and will compost all of our plant waste. While I'm happy to answer any questions you have about our operational experience and plan, I would like to use our limited time today to tell you about how we plan to benefit the local Grover community. We will offer high-paying jobs, health care, and benefits for all our full-time employees, giving preference to members of the local community, patients, and veterans. In addition to the excise tax we proposed, we'll strive to contribute $10,000 in charitable donations to the local community, and we'll increase this donation each year. As a strong community partner, we understand medical cannabis can be expensive. As such, we will offer financial hardship and veterans programs that will allow patients in the community access to the medication. Thank you again for your time and consideration.
Thank you for those. Yes, sure. Of course.
May I ask you a question?
Of course.
How many employees do you have, or how many folks do you employ in Colorado?
In Colorado, we have about 12 employees.
In all three of your...
So we do a wholesale distribution. So we cultivate, we do some outsourcing for who does our trimming and such. We'll have, you know, seasonally different employees, but 12 employees in-house.
Thank you.
Great. Sonny Mullinax.
Good evening. I'm a tall one. Good evening, Mayor Scholes and City Council members. For those of you who are not familiar with my story, it is true what Matthew said. Last year I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer. I went through 8 months of chemotherapy, and I suffered debilitating nausea, treatment-induced anxiety, and weight loss. And one of the key components for going through unscathed and ending up at the end of chemotherapy is to maintain your weight. My oncologist gave me a multitude of pills for anti-nausea and everything else. Nothing was working. The side effects became unbearable. And a friend brought over medical marijuana, and I smoked a little bit. And within 3 minutes, all of my nausea and anxiety went away. In fact, I'm not a great public speaker, so I apologize. It was at that moment I knew that we needed to have this available to all patients. But the problem on the Central Coast, if you're a patient, it's a two-hour drive to the nearest dispensary. There are over 30 mobile dispensaries, but as a woman, I'm not comfortable with somebody coming to my home. I'm also... Is the legitimacy there? You just don't know. There's too many unknowns in this kind of new industry for the mobile dispensary. So I was, I would make the trek once in a while to go to Goleta. But it actually, at that point, it kind of resonated and it became my mission. I didn't want any other patients on the Central Coast to have to go through what I was going through. So I put together a team, and became one of the co-founders of the Monarch. And on this team, we've partnered with an award-winning genetics company and a dispensary expert from Chicago to bring the most incredible operation that we oversee. We have a background of experience with over 6 dispensaries, multiple top quality grow operations and leadership, all with a patient-first focus. And that's an incredible place to be. We don't have it yet, and we really, really need it. Medical cannabis isn't just life-changing, it's life-saving. So please, when you are making that vote, we do need it on the Central Coast. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Mullinax. Brandon Jasicki.
Thought I had more time. Hi, I'm Brandon Gasicki. I'm from Carmel, California. Spent a lot of time down here on the Central Coast. Some of you might remember me. I used to work for Senator and Lieutenant Governor Abel Maldonado for many years. Did a lot of his government affairs work and then gone on private practice of my own. I'm here today. I've got a couple of clients that I represent that are interested in potentially doing business in Grover Beach in this industry. They are not among the 4 applicants. But I just wanted to come down here to say that I think what you guys are doing is exciting, and it's could be a great opportunity for the city if you choose to go this direction. I think the important thing is the clock, right? And I don't mean this clock. For the few cities and counties that are taking this on right now, I think they're getting ahead of the curve. And what I mean by that, with Mercer passed, typical Sacramento's middle of midnight, September 11th, but they passed a regulatory regime. And with that regime, it said that local governments get to decide first. And local governments get to decide what and how much in this industry they want to participate. And they're the ones who license first. So for the applicants and for the folks that I represent, for the other 4 groups that are interested in doing business, getting a license from a local municipality early before January 1st, 2018 is critical. It's critical for the long term of keeping this business and the investment that people are going to make into your city in place for a long time. And for you, I think it would be important, if you choose to go this direction, that adopting or moving forward on the tax measure is critical. You'll have time to get the ordinance right. And you have the fortune of having a city attorney who I've worked with, who has already been going through this process and is very familiar with it. So I think those are things that you should consider. I think the one thing that is important, and when you do that, and you'll do that in the ordinance, is that your security protocol should be signed off by your police chief. I think that's critical, and that will give you good support among the local community on this issue. One of the other things that I think are important, or that you should consider and look at, since I've looked at it with a lot of other cities I've worked with, Monterey County, King City, Gonzales, and many other cities up and down the Central Coast that are looking into this space. The areas to tax or to think about taxing, but I think Martin can address that better for you, would be the dispensary side, which is the sales tax side, cultivation, and cultivation's taxed two ways typically. LA and Oakland kind of set the table. San Jose, Sacramento have done this as well. Either you tax on a square footage basis or on a sales tax basis. More people in the industry, to be competitive, they're doing cultivation on a square footage tax basis. Manufacturing and dispensaries are usually taxed at a sales basis, just to give you that reference. And if there's anything that I've given my card to a few people, but if you want, I can be happy to provide additional information. And I know that you're in good hands with Martin in this process. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Brandon. Oh, we have one late. Okay. Why don't you, yeah, just state your name for the record, since we, and go ahead.
My name is Steve Weissman. I'm Chief Compliance Officer with Monarch. I just wanted to add one thing to that gentleman's comment. If you are going to have security protocols inside of your applications, I would recommend that you make them exempt from a FOIA, Freedom of Information Act, partially because it is it's proprietary business information, but also from a security standpoint, you don't want people knowing your security protocols. So just from a
makes sense.
Thank you. That's all. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Stephen. That was a very good point. All right. I think we got everyone that's here, right? All right. So we're going to close this to the public, bring it back to the council. So organize our thoughts here. So maybe the first question is to regulate or not to regulate. That is the first question. And maybe just a straw poll with everyone. Where's everyone on that? The item to regulate or prohibit.
I'll jump into the fray.
I
will acknowledge as well that I have met with several members of several of the groups as well. So, as a way of kind of educational and background. For myself as we tackle this issue, in everything I've heard, everything I've seen, the industry is coming. So whether maybe it's here, it's just a matter of how it enters the market. As a couple of people have mentioned, I think Grover Beach has an opportunity, and so from a straw poll standpoint, I'd be in favor of moving forward with the discussion.
Okay. Anyone else? Karen?
Well, I'll jump into the fray. I certainly would be in favor of moving forward. I certainly want to get our residents involved, but I definitely think it is, from my personal opinion, I think it is definitely a worthwhile discussion that we need to have.
Okay. Miriam?
Yeah. I'll disclose. I met with Sunny Molinax from Monarch. But yeah, I think we do. We need to look at the regulation, and I want to hurry up, but I want to go slow. So more comments to come as we discuss, but yeah. Yes.
Barbara?
I agree with my cohorts.
Okay.
I definitely think it is time to get engaged in this from a compassionate standpoint as well as from a revenue standpoint.
Okay, very good. And I agree with everyone here. I think we've said this before, that we want to be open-minded and we want to look at regulating this and doing it in a professional manner. So I think the next discussion we need to have is, I know that staff put this at the end of their staff report, but Matt, I will say thank you to you and staff for saying, hey, if you're going to move forward on this item, there are other city and council items that may need to be put on hold because obviously we only have limited resources, correct? So maybe we can have that conversation really quickly.
That's correct. And the point of that paragraph was just to indicate to the council that if you provide direction for us to go forward under the timeline that we identified, that would represent an important council priority for us to implement. That would offset other priorities that are also important, but perhaps would not have the same level of urgency that we would have heard from the council. And so we identified a couple other ones listed here, but as Bruce mentioned earlier, we would want to come back to the council for a more detailed discussion around the key community development-related priorities, because there are a number of important priorities, and we want to make sure that we are following the council's direction on how to proceed and in what time frame.
Okay, because I did notice in the staff report, I think two examples were the vacation rental ordinance and the sign ordinance.
That's correct. And those were listed just as examples. There are 9 priority items overall under the banner of community development. And so we wanted to just kind of list a couple of examples for illustration. But again, we want to come back to the council for more discussion around other items as well.
Okay, then I would suggest we do that. And let me just kind of try and guide some of this conversation. I think Miriam got it exactly right when she says she wants to rush, but she wants to, I'm not going to say go slow, but I think, and I have other, obviously, reasons for this is we find ourselves in July, we find ourselves with an election in November, and geez, we all know that at certain times after September we get into the silly season. So I think the sooner we start this discussion, we can do some, you know, make good progress before we get into those very challenging months, so to speak. So I think it behooves us to move forward and try and put the framework in place. And even if we're focused on the medical side of it, I think the city attorney did talk about that maybe we can put something that, from a pure land use and zoning standpoint, that has the ability to not only regulate the medical, but should the voters in the general election in November approve recreational, then we have a framework in place and we're not trying to chase this. We're trying to get out in front of this. So I think we need to be very specific in the direction we give staff. And so I think we've taken the first step tonight, say we're going to regulate this. And so my thought process is, yes, bring that back. I think the council appears to be a priority, but please let me make sure I don't want to assume silence is concurrence. So
no, it's a priority. I am worried about, are we going to discuss, do we want to make the tax measure hit this November ballot? Or are we going to hold back?
So I think there's a distinction, and I should have asked this question of legal counsel and staff earlier. We could move forward with whether it is a general plan amendment and zoning changes. Obviously, we're talking about a use table, adopting an ordinance. We don't necessarily have to move forward with a tax measure at this time, especially given the short time frame we've got, correct?
If the council desires to put the issue before the voters at this November 2016 election, we would need to receive, the resolution would need to be adopted on August 1st. If you wish to delay that decision until the next election, which will be 2018, then staff can move forward with the zoning and regulatory ordinance or ordinances, and at some point in time receive direction from you to start structuring a taxing ordinance, which would then be on the ballot in 2018. Those are your choices.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Towards that end? So let's say we move. Let's say we delay the taxing issue until 2018, but we put the framework in place to do all this.
what happens to the four potential applications that we would have moving forward? Would any of these businesses be allowed to open?
Well, the taxing of the product or taxing of the activity is not a prerequisite for legally operating once zoning and regulatory ordinances are in place. If you direct staff to move forward and adopt an ordinance that designates the zoning, designates the development standards, designates how you regulate it in the city of Grover Beach, any applicant, whether present here today or otherwise, could file an application and move forward with whatever use is covered by that ordinance, whether or not you have a taxing ordinance in place.
So then how does the city generate revenue from those businesses?
It does not.
Okay, that's what I wanted to make sure.
If there's a sales tax associated with it, there would be some revenue generation.
Those are my two questions. So,
hang on a second.
Then, are you saying that there is no sales tax, that we can't collect sales tax on this?
The issue of sales tax is open at this point in time. It's actually going through some revisions, and I could pull up and bore you with the details.
So we don't know that.
But the determination hinges on whether or not it's medicine.
Okay. So
if medicine is not taxable.
Okay. Okay. So if I'll answer that myself in my own head. And then my other question then is, so let's say that we do have an ordinance and it becomes regulated, knowing that we intend to sometime down the road put a measure on the ballot to tax. In between now and then, would we be able to go forward with some sort of a fee so that we could recoup any of the costs? For example, as the chief had talked about, some sort of whatever it might cost to regulate and to inspect and that sort of thing.
The answer, short answer, is yes.
Any
cost incurred by the city in operation of these allowed uses once the ordinance is passed are recoverable.
Very good. Thank you.
Okay, Jeff. You forgot.
That's incredible.
Nice job, Ms. Bright.
My thought process went in a different direction. So is going towards the manufacturing conversation. If we didn't move forward with the tax initiative on this ballot, would manufacturing fall into an agricultural use? So which would then be taxed under an existing or could be regulated under an existing fee that we have? I'm probably grasping at straws, but I'm trying to figure out if we don't go forward with the initiative until 2018. I can see the residents of the community going, okay, we've allowed this, but we're not reaping the benefits. So
fair enough.
So there's a question.
Fair enough. I don't think he can answer that question. I think we can. What do you have?
The question that I can answer is, again, the any costs incurred by the city, whether you designate the use as agricultural, designate it as commercial, retail, are recoverable. But if you desire to generate revenue from that activity, that needs to be put before the voters and have an affirmative majority vote.
That is correct. Thank you, sir. Okay. So let's back up.
Oh, you jumped so far ahead.
Okay, so you want to finish the discussion on tax? Okay.
No.
Well, so here's the deal. Okay, so here's the deal. And everything that I've read in the proposals, I see everything from an excise tax that starts at 1% and caps at 5%. Versus I saw someone said 10%. So it sounds like we're somewhere in that range between 1% a year and capping it after a certain number of years. I think your point is well taken, that if we're going to go down this road, then let's generate some revenue and let's have that discussion. And I think the range is 5% to 10%. How's that? No, we certainly want to do it in a manner, because I know that there's some issues that have been coming up with taxes that you, in Colorado and other states, to where it's making the products unaffordable for the end user. So we do want to be sensitive to that. So, City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. If we are directed to move forward, we probably would come before you in the next meeting before the August 1st with some discussion.
Yeah.
There are some issues attached to taxing gross receipts, not the least of which is accounting and the ability of tracking it. There are other methods of taxing which are fairly fixed, for example, a flat rate tax on a business or a size of the license. If a cultivation license is issued for 22,000 square feet, then you tax based on the square footage allowed under the license. If it's issued for 8,000 square feet, then that's... So, but that conversation and your final decision on how you wish to proceed based on our much more detailed input than we're providing you with today on this particular issue can be had at the next council meeting. And then if you wish to make a decision on August 1st meeting, you would be in a better position to do that.
Okay. Yes, there could be a two-step process. If the council was interested in exploring the option further, staff would do the research and diligence and bring back some different options and some different amounts to the council on July 18th. And then the council could decide at that point whether to go forward and actually direct staff to craft the ordinance and bring it back to you on August 1st.
So is everyone okay with giving that direction?
I have a question about that timeline.
Sure.
So you have to then have a completed ordinance, tax ordinance to us by August 1st, but not a completed regulatory ordinance.
The tax ordinance would be a draft, and actually, as long as the tax is not greater than that passed by the voters, assuming affirmative vote of the voters, you still have an option to actually change that ordinance when it comes to you after the vote is taken.
So, Mayor, the distinction is on the tax ordinance. We have to take action on August 1st because it has to then go to the Board of Supervisors. So we have some hard deadlines on that.
Right.
From the regulatory or the ordinance, we have a little more time, but
right,
not a lot more time. So,
yeah, what would be the timeline for the regulatory after that?
So let's talk about it.
Yeah. Would it have to be done by November?
I think that's a decision we need to make. The process the staff has laid out, they say it's 6 months. I don't know if when we had this conversation back in December, if we said to go out and hold community workshops. I can tell you today, I'm not that I don't want the community to be involved. I think when we're talking about establishing a framework from a land use standpoint, this body was elected to represent the citizens of this community, and then let's not shirk our responsibility. The public will have ample opportunities to come into whatever meetings, whether it is Planning Commission or City Council, to give that feedback. And then as we go forward, if depending on where we land with this ordinance and where the voting public lands, I think there does need to be some education information. So, you know, I think they say it's 6 months. Proof's in the pudding if that can be done. I was going to ask the question. So if there is not a community workshop up front, is that less time or is it? It's probably truly 4 to 6 months.
Yes. When we put that estimate together, I think we saw 6 months as a conservative target given the process that was outlined here. I think, you know, we would move forward quickly given the council's interest and try to aim for that 4 to 6 month window, also reflecting the EIR process that also would be necessary in building that in as identified in the staff report.
You mean the environmental review process? You didn't mean EIR, did you?
I'm teasing.
It's good. So here's what I would suggest to us. I mean, what I don't want us to do is to get wrapped around axles and staff having to chase this down when other folks are doing this. There are model ordinances. I think the city attorney had talked about, City of King City and others are further along than we are. So let's not reinvent a wheel if the wheel exists. I will say in reading through these, I thought the Monarch Group did a really good job in laying out what could work as a general plan amendment and an ordinance. I hadn't seen what Point Bay and Sotera submitted today, but I would think that we would want to modify our use table to include the variety of uses, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's testing, and I would say anything else that may be a byproduct of this. So whether it's a direct use or a derivative use, we need to figure out what those look like, and that's a matter of putting it in a use table, determining the level. Is it a use permit? Is it allowed by right? Or, you know, is it a special permit? So I think that if we, you know, I don't know if everyone had read through this one, would it be a good model to at least give some very clear direction? That way, you know, we can move this process forward as opposed to doing all this research when others have already done some of the research for us. So what do you all think?
I'm in agreement with that statement. I did get a chance to read, and there's elements of all four that I liked. I think again a framework of whether it's the Monarch Group or another group as the framework for it, and adding our own fingerprints on it, for lack of a better term, is a productive way to go. And realizing other communities are doing similar things, just not quite in the area. Does that either reduce the time frame as well, and or reduce the estimated staff costs?
Yes. I think that with regard to different models of ordinances, when it comes to regulatory ordinances, sure. I mean, the framework is the framework. I mean, it's a code amendment ordinance, mm-hmm. use table amendment. I think the greater amount of time, I predict, will be spent on Grover Beach. Grover Beach is not King City. It's not Santa Barbara. Where, at what density, at what proximities to other sensitive uses for our city? Those are the conversations, and those are the areas where a model is not going to work. It's going to have to be the public, you, and the Planning Commission that will direct us on that. We will bring you, if we're directed, you know, what staff's thoughts are on this point. Environmental review will need to be done depending on what level of uses you're directing us to look at. Level one manufacturing may or may not trigger it. Level two manufacturing will pretty much guarantee to trigger a higher level of environmental review. So there's numerous aspects to this that when you move forward with the regulatory ordinance, we'll bring to you. We have samples. We've worked on the other cities in these areas, so there will be some savings in time. But again, as you've identified, you want this to work in this city, and that's going to be the greater amount of time.
Yeah, I think what I meant earlier when I said I want to hurry up, but I want to go slow, is I think I really don't want to miss the boat on this taxation potential, because, you know, one conservative estimate that Monarch submitted was $120,000 a year. We have 4 to 5 applicants represented in this room, and if we don't get this on the ballot in 2016, I mean, we could potentially miss out on $500,000 in taxes. So that part worries me. The regulation, I really do want to take our time with all of the things that Martin stated. Would we be able to do both of those things?
I think that recognizing the issues that the city manager and the community development director brought up, and that is impact on the projects that are already in the pipeline and are already set as priorities, I'm certain, I know I will, and I'm certain staff will say the same. We'll follow your direction.
Okay. So let me say this again. We give them direction. I think this Monarch has done a really good job. I haven't seen the other templates. I think this, when I read this to me said, this could easily be Grover Beach. This isn't anything from King City, Santa Barbara, or wherever. I mean, they literally looked like they did a lot of homework and identifying our zones. So I think we can help this process along by giving that direction. I think the other part of this is we need to figure out, and I think the city attorney's right, you know, basically when we adopted the adult business ordinance, we looked at, I guess, distance requirements from churches and schools and whatnot, and so maybe that's a discussion we need to have. But so maybe that's part of the directive, is to have that. And I know we talked about 1,000 feet at that time. The other part of this is, I know that Elite Care had talked about something potentially on Grand, and others have talked about other parts of the city. So do we I want to say let's go forward and have an overlay zone, or we say to staff, what does it look like if we allowed it in any retail zone? I think the communities at that point will start showing up because they haven't been educated. But if we talk about an overlay that's in the industrial areas in the southern part of the city, I think that's a direction that we can give staff, whether we want to do an overlay zone or we want to have them look at those two options.
Could I ask two questions?
Sure.
That the speakers brought up in my mind? Will our, because one of the papers that we got, and I read all these really, I just can't separate them out, but one of them said that there were already many dispensaries, mobile dispensaries, already functioning in Grover Beach that are totally unregulated. Now, will our ordinance then begin to regulate those?
I would think staff would recommend that we do. Martin?
I think that that will be, again, entirely up to the council, but I think staff will endeavor to bring all of the aspects of commercial cannabis trade before you. Chief can speak more to level of effort that it takes to regulate mobile dispensaries, but certainly we can include them in the regulations and make that a starting point.
And then another point that was raised by the ladies from Elite Care was that there are going to be people in this business that maybe are not selling a good or safe product. How does our ordinance control the safety of the products, or do we not?
Well, is that a state regulation? That's not necessarily our ordinance, per se.
What I've seen is basic reliance on state licensing and state regulations. Mm-hmm. And state is moving forward and having that type of organization, I won't say bureaucracy, an organization to regulate that.
Okay, thank you.
And did I see that Point Bay had a testing component? Was it manufacturing?
Yeah, as I was reading through their proposal, they've got a testing component for, which is, I think, part of the, bear with me on the acronym, but bummer regulations coming forward, is that the quality of the product that is either distributed, mobile distributed, or sold at retail has to meet certain criteria, and so there's a testing component to that. And I think that was one of their elements, along with potential for manufacturing, and then also secure distribution for from cultivation site to manufacturing, and then from along a dispensary side to a mobile dispensary, so that there's a quality control aspect to the product delivery. And I don't know if it's appropriate, but I think that was part of the conversation I had with the sweat. Sam specifically.
Okay. So I think we've given direction that we do want to regulate this. We do want to adopt an ordinance, and that ordinance, we look at it from a land use and zoning perspective. I think the template, and I'm not saying we don't customize it further. I think we need to do that. But I think the Monarch template that they've provided, I'd be interested in seeing the one that was submitted by Point Bay and Sotera today. But I think staff has good enough direction, and we got professional staff to let them do that. I do want to make sure that we have the discussion about the location. Does it make better sense to have an overlay in the industrial areas, or do we look at Grand Avenue and whether it's individual lots or shopping centers? Don't know. I think that's maybe a discussion, and maybe the environmental level of environmental review does change at that point. So I think that's something staff will have to take into consideration. Deliveries we talked about. I think we talked about residential. And even though that's not part of the commercial, and then the issue of tax, staff, you'll come back at the next meeting and we'll have that discussion. Did I miss anything?
And I apologize, and I'll let you jump in. Just so staff is clear, you want the regulatory ordinance to apply to every aspect of commercial medical marijuana.
That is correct.
There's nothing that you're leaving off the table, from transportation all the way through to cultivation.
That is correct.
Okay.
And I think even to take it a step further, staff, as you start to craft this, that maybe the discussion becomes, I know you said 6 months was a conservative. If there are opportunities to do it quicker, or if there are factors that kind of weigh into whether it's going to take longer or can be done shorter, you know, maybe just an update on that would be helpful.
Certainly.
Sure. Okay. Everyone okay?
Well, one other thing I'd like us to discuss when we discuss the ordinance is how many licenses are we going to give?
Right.
Because some cities only give one, so.
Mm-hmm. You. Yes, because clearly tonight we are not talking about a specific application. We're talking about setting a framework. I will say the one thing that I was pleasantly surprised by is that of all the folks who are in the room tonight, you could see some distinctions between those different groups, and so it wasn't everyone saying we want a dispensary. I think that's kind of was very interesting to me, at least. Mm-hmm. That's just my observation. But yes, I think we are going to have that conversation. Yep. Yes,
and Eric, I think we have clear direction on how to proceed going forward. One thing I'll add, as Bruce mentioned in his staff report, we did estimate a $30,000 cost impact for the legal development time, mm-hmm. as well as the CEQA time. That's money that is not budgeted right now for this endeavor. So we did mention that this could be a use of general fund reserves, given the specialized one-time nature of this work. So the council was open to that possibility. We would go forward and make
Thank
that
you.
Adjustment.
Thank you, Matt. Is the council open to that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Is
Very
that
good.
Something we can recoup from applicants at a later time?
That was going to be my question to the attorney.
Yeah, thank you. And I think, again, to the extent that any of the work can be individualized to a particular application, we can attempt to do that. But also to the extent that generally we're going to be doing a zoning amendment or potentially a GPA, that fee can be spread again.
That's true. Yeah. That's a great point. Thank you, Martin.
As just a consideration there as well is if we are going to have a discussion about what to projects or initiatives not to move forward with, i.e. the vacation ordinance, when we have that discussion, there would be some potential staff savings from not doing those endeavors as well, correct?
Potentially.
But potentially.
Yes.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Everyone good?
Mm-hmm. One last item. I want to make sure from the city attorney, the Elite Care group had talked about, and it might have been the Monarch group as well, had talked about either educational or medical or some level of, I'll call it consultation. Is that allowed under state law? And would that be something that would be permissible? So there, and specifically I wrote down in the retail locations, there was a consultation and education. So I can see education being probably easily defined, but consultation and medical advice, is that something that would be regulatable under this ordinance?
It would be regulated as a land use issue, because it can become a somewhat different use than just a retail store. You have medical clinics, you have other uses, and if you know, Bruce can provide us with more detail if you think it's necessary. But the short answer is yes, we can definitely regulate it as a land use.
So yeah, let's take a look at that. I mean, it's obviously different if someone's holding a class and teaching people how to open up a facility. It's different if someone goes in, when you go to the drugstore, they ask if you want a consultation or not. So we got to be very careful how we address that issue. Mm-hmm. But what point we'll take it. All right, why don't we take a 10-minute break? We convened the Grover Beach City Council meeting for Tuesday, July 5th, 2016, and when we last ended, we had finished up on, I believe it was item number 12. So we had pulled item number 10, And that is delegation of authority to the city engineer to execute Caltrans local assistance documents associated with state and federal grant funded projects. Mayor Pro Tem Lee, I think you had requested this item be pulled.
Yes, thank you for that. And really just my question surrounded or centered around the request to have the authority delegated to the city engineer. And I'm just wondering if it was more appropriate and maybe a semantical nuance of us delegating it to the city manager and then having it him delegate that to the city engineer as appropriate. And then also just wanted to take an opportunity to get a status update on the specific project, i.e. the train expansion project, train station expansion project.
Okay. City manager?
Sure. So the item before you is the delegation of the processes for local assistance grants to the city engineer. This was an action that was modeled after a few other cities that have taken similar actions to have their city engineer be in this key role. That being said, staff would be comfortable with an amendment to city manager or their designee. That's something that the council can do, and staff is fine with that if the council wishes to do that. Also, the intent of this item was to make a blanket authority for this delegation rather than on a project-by-project basis, so that this would cover the train station expansion and any future local assistance projects where such grant funds may be eligible. So, again, that's a council call. We can keep it to just this project or have this blanket authority, and you can make it to the city manager or their designee to actually carry this forward. In terms of the train station project itself, we are advertising an RFP right now for the engineering design services for the expansion project, and those responses are due by July 22nd. Staff will be working very hard and very diligently to move that process forward as quickly as possible given upcoming deadlines. We are looking at having a closed session with the council coming up in the month of August to discuss some lease issues with that site in particular.
And okay. Honorable Mayor, council members, if I might just briefly add, if you desire to limit this resolution to a singular instance, specifically to that project, my recommendation would be that we bring that back to you at the next meeting, as it was not agendized as such an item.
Okay, but tonight it was intended as a blanket authorization,
correct?
That's
correct. Mm-hmm.
And so, and you're suggesting that perhaps it be to the city manager and or his designee?
Correct.
Okay. Yep.
But as a blanket, you're all right with it being a blanket?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, from that perspective, okay. it's we work with Caltrans on a frequent basis, mm-hmm. Enough basis. We have enough projects with them through local assistance, either periodically or frequently enough to where it doesn't need to come to us all the time if we have the authority delegated.
Okay.
Okay.
So if there's no other questions, I don't believe there's anyone in the audience that wants to speak on this item. So someone want to make a motion on this?
Then I'll go ahead and make a motion that we adopt the resolution delegating authority to and designating the city manager or his designee as the authorized representative to execute Caltrans local assistance documents associated with the processing of state and federal grants.
I'll second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. There's no additional discussion. Roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Motion carries. Thank you, Donna. How about council committee reports? Karen, you have anything?
I do not. Thank you.
Very good. Jeff?
I do not.
Oh, hey. Barbara?
I do not.
Miriam?
No, I didn't. Nobody wanted to meet with me. And nope. No meetings.
All right. And I don't have any updates. Because I've got LOCOG and South Sand tomorrow. Any council communications?
I do have two items, one of which is I will be not in attendance at the regular meeting of the 18th. So you can have a very short meeting at that date without me asking questions. So, and I will be... I will also be away from the area on the 21st of July as well, which is a Zone 3 meeting, but I spoke with Karen about her attending in my stead as the alternate.
Okay, very good. Anyone else? Karen?
Yes, please. At the suggestion of our city manager, I got involved in a neighborhood website. And after last night's display, there were so many people that were very, very concerned about the fireworks.
Oh.
It was really, really amazing how many people were very, very disturbed by the close proximity of the fireworks to their homes and dry brush and so on. So I think that might be something that this council may want to take a look at.
So, question for you, if you don't mind, what did it have to do with the safe and sane or the illegal fireworks?
I can't say. I do know that there people were specific about illegals, mm-hmm. but then there were some that they weren't specific.
Okay. So, is there a consensus to revisit this issue?
I would say so.
I think there is.
Yeah, I would. I know when we talked about it before, we didn't want to hurt revenue of public service organizations. But as I was watching the news last night, there are fewer and fewer cities allowing it. It's really dwindling. And so it may be time to take another look.
So let's take. Okay, so there is consensus of taking a look. I will work with the city manager because they know that we just had this conversation about the previous item and staff's workload. So let's figure out if that's something that can be put off for at least a few months.
Before the next 4th of July.
Yeah. Yes.
Before next year. Maybe we can consider going in a slightly different direction with that. So realizing that the Five Cities Fire Authority and our chief is, I'm sure, going to get upset with me as I say this. But since they are basically in charge of the booth lottery and being responsible for that, can we put this task on them to provide a report back to us, realizing it is really a city issue, but they will know from a standpoint of how many people came forward from the community to say yes, we'd like this sales potential sales numbers. That would be the impact, but then also how many response calls they had and so forth. So I don't know if we can.
So I would suggest that I think we have a good direction for this council, since I think it is an ordinance for ours. But I think Five Cities Fire Authority, I will, in that capacity, ask the chief to come back with a report on responses and anything associated with use of fireworks, safe and sane or otherwise.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. City manager?
And to that point, we can also talk to Chief Lieberman and have that information be incorporated into our report that will go back to the council for further discussion.
Okay. So I guess whichever works best for you. Everyone okay?
Great. And then just to kind of close the loop on that, did see a press release, obviously, from the chief yesterday with regards to a confiscation of illegal fireworks. And so from the community standpoint, we were out there. The city staff was out trying to police that where possible.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and there was another issue. A woman had talked about all the smoke, and she has a health issue, and so that could be safe and sane, I guess. You know, with all the smoke that had come in mm-hmm. her house, and she was having a hard time breathing. Anyway, so I guess there's many issues that surround that.
Maybe we could do a fireworks show in April when the weather's nice and then not worry about it in July.
There's a lot of wind.
Just joking, folks. Just joking. All right. Anyone else have any communications?
Oh, I'll just keep bringing your kids into the Grover Beach Library. We've got Barbara can comment that we have a ton of kids.
You guys ever been any guest readers? Can I come and read?
Well,
I think you ought to come and read to Rower.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lay on the floor with a dog and read.
Wait.
Well, we do have story time every Monday at 10:30, and somehow I have become one of the readers.
Day.
So I don't know why.
Because you wanted to restart story time.
Because I'm all there. Right. So you so, can, any Monday that you are free.
Sounds good. I will keep that in mind. I think the only thing I wanted to communicate was, I should have brought this up earlier, the Five Cities Fire Authority, we've been talking about the joint powers agreement that that we have in place, and the board did go and take a look at and working with staff where some areas might be where, I think I brought this up previously, where we can find agreement and there may be quick or administrative changes versus some of the lot more wholesale changes. And I believe that that's something that we need to put on the agenda and have a more robust discussion about. So if there's a consensus, everybody's okay with that, I'll work with the city manager and we'll find the most appropriate date and time to do that.
Okay.
Okay. Very good. City manager, any reports or comments?
Just two. One is I want to thank the chief for his time yesterday doing a ride-along with me to see our July 4th festivities across the city. We saw some great parties and front yard gatherings and a lot of good community building activities, and we also saw some of the fireworks that were mentioned earlier. So it was quite a festive evening and a lot to take in as a newcomer to the community. So thank you, Chief, and thank you to your staff for having me come along for most of the evening last night. And then two, as the council is aware, we began some major street paving work today. We had streets all across the city being grinded. I witnessed some of the grinding taking place on 7th Street, and it was quite amazing to watch these machines in action and spewing up the asphalt and starting off with that important process before they then pulverize the streets to get them ready for the final act, and that is the pouring, the asphalt pouring, which we're all eagerly awaiting for. So that work again began today and will be going forward across the city in a number of streets over the course of this next week and beyond. And then we'll move forward into the Oak Park work starting over this next week.
Smashing.
Do you have some? No. Okay.
Oh, actually, yes. Sorry, I moved my microphone and it's like, oh yeah, there was a reason for that. Sorry. So there was a email that you sent out yesterday with regards to the gas line work on Oak Park. Can you give a quick update on how that was corrected or modified?
Sure. Yesterday, the gas company was out on the holiday doing some needed work on Oak Park in preparation for our upcoming street rehab work coming up this next week. The gas company did leave some steel plates unaffixed to the street, and credit to the chief for his quick response upon hearing the news yesterday. We had city crews, a PD sergeant out there to help with traffic control and immediately getting the gas company to come back to the site and take care of the problem that they had created. They came back very promptly, so credit the gas company for that response, and they patched the street up by probably 7 o'clock last night before the mass exodus took place later in the evening. So that was taken care of. We will be sending them the costs of our response and also damage claims that we received so that the gas company is responsible for taking care of those.
Great. And thank you, Matt, for that update on the streets and putting it in a language that most people will understand, not only the styes, but watching at home. So, City Attorney, any report or comments?
Thank you. Very briefly, Honorable Mayor, Council members. First of all, August 1st meeting, it looks like Mr. Hale will be handling that. And since it looks like potentially the taxing ordinance will be on the agenda, that's probably... you'll be in good hands. He's the one who did most of the work on the other one. I have a trial that's starting, unfortunately. I could not settle it today, so it looks like I will be in trial on the 1st. Secondly, I've been asked to and agreed to present the League of California Cities and the City Attorney Division on noticing requirements for agendas. So if any of you are inclined to swing by and watch the presentation, will be Thursday, and even if you're not, I'm sure we'll see each other at the league in some fashion or another.
Great, thank you for that, and that reminds me. So, has everyone talked to the city clerk about going to the annual conference? So, I wanted to let you know I do have an interest in attending.
All signed up.
Wow!
I got my hotel room.
No.
Me too.
Jeff.
And I forget, when is it? It's this week.
So apparently he's not signed up.
Not signed up. No.
It started last week.
That's what I thought. It was like, huh, sounds like I think I've missed the opportunity.
No, I think it was in Matt's letter, Friday letter, right?
Yeah, it's October 5th through the 7th, right?
Okay,
Diamond?
Gotcha.
It's,
yeah.
Like, it's October when
you said,
this year.
When you said Thursday, it's like, wait a second. Gotcha. I am.
Yeah.
Okay. Then yes, I am interested. I don't have my hotel yet.
Yes. So. The Mayor Pro Tem and I and Miriam and Barbara, correct? Okay. So we have one closed session item tonight, and it is Public Employee Performance Evaluation pursuant to Government Code Section 54957, Employees of City Manager. We don't have anyone in the audience who wants to speak on closed session, so with that, we are going to recess into closed session.